There's nothing like air guitaring to your own stuff. Sorry we are late. There's several reasons why. I won't get into four of them. I'll just let you know about one of them. A kid called last minute. And if you know anything about me and TIR and anything on TIR, I always take that call. Thank you guys for joining us for another episode of Beyond the Red Zone. Before I bring in my right-hand man in these leftist sports affairs, I do want to remind you guys that it is very important that if you are on the East Coast or a bit of a globetrotter, you should leave June 8th open because we are going to be live in D.C. You can't hurt me. What? We're live in D.C. Yes. I wish I could play the Bad Brains right now. So bad. But me, Pascal, Derek Varn, Daniel Tutt, Billy Bunton, who fills in on this show from time to time. And I believe there's even more people because there's going to be like an after party. Don't know where the after party is going to be, but this is going to be Busboys and Poets, June 8th, 6 p.m. in the Langston Room. Ooh. So get your tickets. We'll put some links up and it should be a good time. Thank you guys for tuning in. Now let me bring in the man you guys really came here to see, Mac.
I can hear all the virtual applause, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Everybody, it's WrestleMania week, and I'm really excited.
Is it WrestleMania week already?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I told you I got to work a WrestleMania access in between tours one year. And that was one of the more surreal times in my 46 years of life.
I heard it's pretty nuts, and it's only gotten worse since the Saudi money started coming in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they're contractually mandated to do two PLEs a year in Saudi Arabia, and the Saudi government just essentially hands them a blank check, and they're like, hey, we'll cover production and all that stuff. All you need to do is let us know how much money you want from us to keep this thing going. And of course, McMahon, you know, Vince was just like, bruh.
The cash grab that is WrestleMania access is disgusting. It's 90 minutes. Well, this is when I did it in 2014. It could be very different now that they have a budget. It's 90 minutes long. And there's two a day for a weekend. I think starting Friday, maybe Thursday. I don't remember everything. It's been 10 years. And I don't know where that autograph is. I had an autograph from Nikolai Volkov. But anyway, so you know it's just a great big autograph signing, right? And there's premium autographs that you pay for, and that's timed. And there's usually like two a day, I think, of the premium. So that's Hogan. When I was there, it was Hogan, Ric Flair. Who was the champ back then? 2014. Sting was a premium.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. They pretty much do the same thing now. But you have to essentially get a pass, and everything kicks off on Wednesdays. Like Wednesdays is like kickoff day now.
You had to get the pass, right? Yeah. So that gets you in, and then you can get. Then there's all these other wrestlers. And when I say all these others, like Rowdy Piper was alive. So he was one of the others.
Yeah.
And when he showed up, you know, he's Rowdy Piper wherever he goes, especially in this arena. So he just kind of just came through the door. I said it before. And everybody was like, Piper. Now, if you are too busy getting the other guys, you miss out on your chance that you paid extra for. For your premium.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is what it is. And they don't play around, man. When that time hits, it's like, all right, the next crop of you sons of bitches.
I mean,
Yeah,
you can say what you want about Dave Meltzer. Like, he's kind of like the insider for all things pro wrestling. But he hits more often than he misses. But, you know, he pretty much says that you have a rotating list of who, like, the premium autographs are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this year, Rhea Ripley's definitely going to be one. You know, okay. She's probably the hottest name in pro wrestling right now.
There was no women that were premium when I was there.
Well, you got to think, WrestleMania didn't have a female head at, you know, didn't have a female mainline, you know, like, be the main event at WrestleMania until 3 years ago, and that was Becky
Lynch. Yeah, there were women there, but, you know, we're talking the Wendy Richter years, the Fabulous Moolah years. It was very different. Wendy Richter was there. I think Moolah was gone by then. There were some... The way they treat women... I mean, I'm sure things are different. Again, it was 10 years ago. But, yeah. Oh.
I mean, the thing is, Triple H, when he was in charge of NXT... really put a premium on developing women talent, right? Mm-hmm. So when he took over, you know, WWE overall, you know, he put them in a position where they can main event the big shows, you know, stories revolve around them, you know, like it's been great to see, because there are some ridiculously talented women out there that are wrestling. And it's not even just WWE. AEW's got great has a great, you know, women's roster, but Tony Khan just doesn't know how to book very well when it comes to women's matches. You know, you have the Japanese NJPW, the main, you know, that's the main kind of temple wrestling organization there, but they got three or four like all women's leagues in Japan. You know, Ring of Honor is owned by Tony Khan as well. They got some good talent. Like, women are on the up, man, and it's pretty rad to see, because, you know, I remember when I was watching wrestling before, it was like Trish Stratus, Lita, Beth
Phoenix. Oh, you're talking like the 90s.
Yeah.
We got to go back to the 80s for me, when it was Moolah and Rick, and that was like it.
And the thing is, Moolah was like a dude more than Jesus in the 80s. You know,
the 80s! And she was still literally hurting people. Did you watch The Darker Side of the Ring on Fabulous Moolah?
No, I see, I'm trying to find a way where I could watch that, because YouTube. Like, oh, they have it on YouTube? Sweet. Yep. Say less. But we probably should talk about what we're gonna talk about. Like, that.
Yes.
Good. And you're educating me on a new word.
Okay.
That needs to be added to the TIR book.
I gotta get this out of the way. And if you walk to Mexico to put me in a chokehold because of this, I totally understand. Now, there is a I should just play you the video. But anyway, there's this thing called an Edgar.
Okay. Thing.
It's usually like a young Latin kid, and he's got this certain kind of haircut, like a bullish mushroom cut, right?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, that's the Edgar. And I have this theory that I'm not wanting to work on. Dr. Claus says, I hope he doesn't. Dr. Claus says, oh no. So in the champagne room, I've been finding these really bad rap videos, and we've just been listening to them, and I've been sending very maybe borderline racist messages to some of my friends. And I played this thing, and I found out that the kids weren't Latin. They were actually native. And so Varn goes, oh, they're indigenous. And he tried to say indigen Edgar.
Oh, no. Oh, oh no. The minute you said he tried to say it, I immediately was like, oh, God.
Oh, yep.
Oh. And then Varn made a new word. He made a new word.
He made a new. So there's a whole new slur in the TIR canon of slurs. And Varn, and you know, he he when he said it, I cracked up, and he's like, "No, no, I didn't mean." You know, he's not. He, in all fairness, the man really did. But hey, I heard what I heard.
Yeah, and that's when you beat him over the head with it for about a month.
This is going to go on maybe longer than the raisin stuff.
The thing is, you're going to find someone who's mixed indigenous and black, right? And have them on the show and just throw it at them and they're just going to be like, excuse me?
Wait, can I show you a racist photo before we start?
Oh, gosh. You know what? We're already.
Mac. If your kid goes and gets this Edgar cut, I just need you. No, son. No, I love you too much.
Let's see it.
I want to show you this. I hope I sent this to MT. I sent this to all of my black friends. Actually, I sent this to all the black people I know, even a few in my family. And... you ever have people that you don't talk to in your family for hella long, but you're cool with them?
Yeah, that's like most of my cousins.
Oh yeah, dude, everybody got this picture from me. Where'd it go? I gotta find it. Here, be entertaining while I find it.
Okay, well, someone asked for an update on the job interview. Well, it didn't go well because it wasn't the job in the listing that was described was not what they were interviewing me for. It was a roofing company, and the job I was interviewing for was to go inspect roofs to make sure they were structurally, you know, okay, and to if the roof was damaged, you know, this is what you need to do to make sure the structural integrity of the roof would be fixed, blah 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 blah, right? Well, no, they wanted a salesperson to essentially have me, you know, if you live on the East Coast during hurricane season, man, your roof takes a beating. They wanted me to essentially drive around, look for people with roof damage, and then try to sell them on having this company fix it. 100% sales, 100% commission. It was just a shit show. So I'm an adult being interviewed by like a 24-year-old who did sales like for 2 or 3 years and he got a promotion. And he's like, no, that's my job in the description. But see, we want you to get this job eventually. But at first, you're going to chase storms and sell. I was like, bro, I got 2 kids, man. I'm not doing that. 100% commission. No fucking way. So I kind of lit into this dude and let him know that this is like a really poor business practice to have. You know, because you're going to get people to come and interview that want the job that you posted and you have no intention on letting them have that job or whatever, man, like, come on. So I then lodged a complaint with the Better Business Bureau for faulty business practices. So they got busted. I guess they had an inspector go down there, and so there's a fine to be paid. They called me like pretty salty, but I don't give a shit, man. Like, if you're going to interview me for a job and you lie about it and you waste my time, which I don't have a lot of free time, you know, and you're going to take my free time, bitch, no, I got you.
That's the worst.
Yeah. Like, bro, I work 2 shit jobs, man. I want to go like kick it with my kids or like catch up on sports or do some writing, read my books. Like, yeah. Dude, I own 412 books. I've maybe only read 114 of them. Mm-hmm. So I got like a lot of shit I'm trying to catch up on, bro. Got there 10 minutes early. I'm like in a button down and khakis and a tie, even though literally they said dress casual. That should have been.
There was like, some dude next to you with a dirty ass wife beater.
Dude, you are not even kidding. The dude that was in there when I got there had a Randall Cunningham like a t-shirt jersey in the Kelly green. Okay. And it just looked so beat up, dude. Like, you had it.
It wasn't stylish. It wasn't a throwback.
It wasn't crisp, dude. It's like he went thrifting because he needed to get some t-shirts.
It happens.
Hey, I do too. I just bought 3 pairs of jeans this week at a thrift store.
The craziest thing I've ever seen in a job interview when I was, I took a Greyhound bus to interview for a job to work in the Gulf of Mexico.
Oof.
Yeah, we don't need to get into the details.
Yeah,
but
that's rough work, man.
So there's a drug test we had to take, and we're all sitting in a room, us applicants, and there's probably like maybe 10 of us or so. And the guy that is going to take us to the next stage of this job application looks at one of the dudes that was sitting next to me, and he goes, your urine is red. And the dude looks at him like, yeah. And he goes, there's blood in it. And the guy goes, yeah. Like, I was...
Yeah, man, my kidney's been failing for about 3 years now, but I'm good to go.
Yeah, man, like, what do you need? This is what I want to know. What do you need? You're over here talking about particulars.
They're like, we can't hire you, but my manager feels horrible. But so we're going to pay for either a transplant or dialysis. We're going to let you pick, you know. But
yeah. That.
But
that,
see, the thing is, if he says it was most, if there's red in your piss, like, it's not just blood. That's a lot of blood, man. Like, not a little bit.
I was like. I literally went like this. I was like, and I thought the guy was gonna do what I would have done, and like, oh my goodness, I think I need to see a doctor.
That's horrible. Do you have an on-site medic? You
know, yeah. Like, no, his response was, and. Yeah, I don't want to get into that, but I do want to get into this. I saw this photo, and I don't know if you can see this. Can you see this gentleman right here, Mac?
Yes. Somebody and commented.
Niggle me this.
No. Jesus Christ. Okay, can we just kind of address this? Why does he look like my best friend from high school's grandma going to church on Sunday morning? Like, I'm not a fashion icon by any means, right? But a green zoot suit and a fucking giant...
Giant.
What was that?
This is a church lady hat. This is a very church lady hat.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure Norton Thornton's mom or grandma had that hat, and I saw her go to the Baptist church in Warren with that same hat on.
Somebody said, niggle me.
The thing is, and now my chest hurts. Like, that one really got me. I've laughed that hard to where, you know, like, where you can't breathe.
Dude. Between that and Derek Varn's oopsie with Indigenous Edgar.
Oh, Varn.
That's one of the funniest things. Those two things combined made my day and made me stronger as a human.
See, the thing is, you actually have a mixed Indigenous and Black like viewer that was just like, oh no, fuck this, dude. You know? he's like pushing away from his desk where his laptop's at. He's like, nuh-uh.
Either they did that and like threw the computer, or they were getting stoned and just they're still laughing.
Yeah. Like to the right now.
Dr. Claw says, did I just see the Riddler? No, you saw the Niggler.
Okay, Dr. Claw, you saw the Riddler from Timu. Okay, that's what you saw.
You saw the Riddler from the Good Times reboot.
It's the new woke Batman universe. Okay. Yeah.
You know how woke shit just reifies racist stereotypes? So that's what that shit is. Black people have a sense of fashion. Okay.
No, you know who's in charge of that writing room? Kenya Burris.
He's right somewhere right now watching this. Niggle me this. That's my new show.
Yeah.
The Black Riddler. The Black Riddler, and Gotham is just Southside Chicago.
Oh, God. Oh. You gotta say Indigenous Edgar very slowly, or else you'll sound racist.
I kinda wanna play it for you, Mac. It was so funny, dude. It's this kid, he's like 12 years old, and he's rapping about his problems and his drug dealing habit. I don't know if he's got a habit or he's dealing, but he just looks so tired. I'm like, why are you 12 looking so tired and fed up with life? Like, damn, 15's finna kick your ass. 12's doing this to you.
Well, in that poor kid's defense, if he's off the res, like,
they were rapping about being res kids.
Yep, that explains it right there.
But they were styling.
Oh, dude, one of my best friends I met in the Army, a guy named Gabe Kisei, just phenomenal dude. He was full-blooded Apache. And, like, his dad was a legend in, like, the SF community. And he did, like, 24 years in Special Forces and then, like, another 12 in CIA clandestine services or some nonsense.
Jesus.
So when we got to selection, the instructors automatically started targeting him, trying to get him to quit. Mm-hmm. Right? Gabe's, like, 6'4", and just, like, has, like, more of a boxer's build, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's wiry. He's got the muscle there. You know, and I'm built like a fucking trash can. You know, I'm like 5'8" and just fucking wide in the shoulders. And we just like really hit it off and we're really good friends. But like he looked like in all his pictures, he just looked beat down. Right. Like as a kid. And when we graduated selection in Sears school, his dad flew out from Arizona to, you know, Fayetteville to hang out. So we're like in our apartment. And like his dad brings this fucking photo album that's like this thick, and I'm just looking at all these pictures. And I said that, and Mr. Kisa is like, "Bro, grow up on the res." He's like, "There's
times is hard."
Yeah, that's what he said. He's like, "Nothing's easy on the res, man." And like he's trying to tell us about. He's like, keep in mind, it's Gabe and his dad are the two like indigenous people in the room. The rest of us is just it's Lily White. Mm-hmm. And then we have our buddy Ricky, who was the only black dude there because, you know, the SF community is not what you would call very welcoming of non-white folks. So he's like
SF is Special Forces, not San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let people know that. I don't want people to think that San Francisco is full.
Let's face it. There's parts of San Francisco that aren't very welcoming to people of color now.
It's called San Francisco.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about? There's like 8 black people there.
They all work for Meta.
And none of them are from San Francisco.
No.
No, I'm from Tennessee.
I went to Brown, okay? So.
I just came here to make sure the rest of you niggers are gone. Where are the white women at?
I know there's some around here.
Long butts.
I like him as round as a flapjack.
Now we just lost both women listeners.
It's all right. Ladies, do squats.
That's okay. You don't do anything you don't want to do.
That's right. That's right. Someone listens for who you are.
It's like Virtuoso goes. We'll get to women's basketballs. Speaking of women doing squats.
That's right.
Women's basketball is kind of amazing. And the Elite Eight for women's basketball probably was what people wanted to see for the Final Four.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What is your take on what we're seeing, A, in women's sports in general? We talked about this a little bit last week. But with women's basketball in particular, they're just dominating the ratings to the point where that's the first part of the story.
Yep.
I was trying to drive up to the Bay. I couldn't make it because of weather, but I was listening to some sports talk radio. And the first thing they're saying is, you know, how many people have been watching the women's tournament? And one, I can't remember who said it. It was one on one of the ESPN's national shows. They're like, we have to admit it right now. Caitlin Clark is the biggest athlete that anyone's talking about in any sport.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. You have to think 5 years ago, there were three men's postseason basketball tournaments, right? You have March Madness, the NCAA tournament, the one we all know and love. You have the NIT, which is like the second tier one, which is actually older than the NCAA tournament. And then you have the College Basketball Invitational, right? Even you go a little further back, about 15 years ago, there were four of them. You know,
what was the fourth one?
Dude, it was like some corporate sponsor. Like, dude, it was a 32 team draw.
The Minute Maid International.
Yeah, you know, but it had like teams coming from the smaller conferences, but like the bottom half of the smaller conferences. Okay. So it was like, you know, welcome to the Bahamas Bowl, played in a soccer stadium of 20,000 seats, and we see there's only 8,000 people there. You know, like nobody really gave a shit, so it went away. So there's three. And 10 years ago, the women's NCAA tournament could barely outdraw, like TV-wise, not asses in seats, but TV-wise, they could barely do better than the CBI. Now, in the last few years, we've seen like a big sea change where the women's tournament is outdrawing the NIT. You know, and again, guys, I don't mean like ticket sales and stuff. I'm talking TV numbers, which is the all important number when you're talking about advertising, when you're talking about these schools getting a larger check at the end, right? You know, that type of thing. So more and more eyeballs are on the women's tournament. And then we get to this year. And yes, there's some truth there that Caitlin Clark she's the absolute main draw. But we're seeing people more emotionally invested in women's basketball, man. Well, in women's sports in general, but especially this women's tournament. And a lot of that has been, whether we like it or not, okay, women are marketing themselves using like social media to show off that they're feminine, but then they get on the court and they, you know, play like a dude, I guess, for lack of a better term, right? And we can say, you know, we can piss and moan about social media and everything, but that's kind of really elevated people recognizing players, right? I think that's important, you know, because if we didn't have social media, let's be honest, if we did not have social media, say Caitlin Clark played in 2003, nobody would know who she was.
Nobody would care.
Yeah.
She'd be Cheryl Miller.
Yeah. Who was a transcendent athlete that people really didn't know was any good until she started calling NBA games, you know, like,
yeah. And her brother.
Yeah.
Who she, you know, we only hear the stories, and I don't think they're lies, but she dominated her brother even when they played against each other. And the funniest stories, when Reggie went for like 80 in high school and his dad and sister were laughing. And then the dad says, well, yeah, Cheryl went for one something. She went over 100. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so like, I mean, I think this is great because, you know, you have to think 2 years ago, the NCAA, it goes all out for the men's tournament, but not the women. And the women were like going on Twitter and showing, this is what the NCAA gave us to eat. And it was like something out of the Fyre Festival. Okay. Like, you know, their weight room, Jason, was a converted conference room that they just stacked some dumbbells in. These are.
Nobody can we admit there? I think there's two things happening, and I could be wrong. I haven't read data on this. We can't deny the fact of social media being transcendent in amateur athletics.
Oh, absolutely.
Number one. And we can't deny the fact that AAU women's sports is a bit of a game changer because now parents, young people, young kids are just more invested in amateur athletics for women. And the WNBA, you know, no one knew how this was going to work out. And there's people talking about a lot of these athletes from the early years of the WNBA that were great college athletes that never got this much shine and praise. Marketing yourself as a brand is something that the younger generation understands a lot more than the get money millennials and Gen Zers or Gen Xers, I'm sorry. And we have to take that into account for better or for worse.
Yeah.
This is an observation.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely agree. You have to be able, especially in the NIL space, you have to be able to market yourself. Right. And that's why, like, when I see people shit on the Cavender twins, why? Because they did something you couldn't. Right. And then I saw, I'm on a Discord server and I saw someone like, well, you know, they were average basketball players. No bullshit. The one that's coming back to play for TCU, she averaged 15 points a game, like 4 assists, 3 steals. That's a big chunk of, you know, a good offense. The other sister was only, she only averaged like 4 points a game, but that's why she retired. She didn't want to deal with the shit anymore, you know, but you know what she's doing? She's marketed herself very well, you know. Honestly, their social media game's on point, and it's really led to people like, you know, Angel Reese and a lot of the other women that we know, you know, a little more than maybe some of their teammates. It's because they have a great social media presence, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, do what you can, man. Like, you know, the fact of the matter is we're the economy's changing whether we like it or not. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read an article today that said, like, you know, they interviewed like 100 people, 55 years old. You know, they're supposed to be heading into retirement. They're like, we can't. We don't have enough money. You know, yeah. Like the days of getting a pension after 20 years at a company are gone. You know,
they put 20 years at a company.
Yeah. And even then, dude, even then, right? Most companies, even if they can entice you to stay with benefits and other compensation packages, right? They've moved away from the pension model and went to that 401k bullshit, which I don't know if the owners of these companies have realized everything is a lot more expensive and has only gotten progressively more expensive over the last 20 years. I don't have like 100 extra bucks every month to dump into a 401k. I don't,
mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be great if we could, you know, just like, it's ridiculous, man. So like, if these women want to get out there and take a couple TikToks of them running around in a bikini on their, you know, on their off time, who gives a shit? Let them, because they're going to have a sponsor lined up for, you know, from a bikini company. That's going to be like, listen, dude, we're going to pay you 200K a year. You just make like X amount of TikToks a month wearing our gear. That is fucking easy, bro. I will do that. I will do that for $300 a month. Right.
Max, so you see these titties? I'll even shave them.
I mean, there's a lot of tattoo work there. So, like, if people are more, like, visually, like, you know, there's a lot of that, you know. But, yeah, man, it's absolutely nuts that people get so fucking pissed off. And let's face it, it's mostly, like, terminally online conservative white dudes, right? You know, so.
But the question is, like, what do you want? That's my question. Is like, what do you want? These kids got the thing that all of you, even conservatives, especially libertarians, have been saying, let the kids make money off their image. Okay.
Yep.
Have at it. Make money off your image. And they're doing it. And the old school coaches are showing you right now, we don't like this model. And when they, well, why don't you like this model? Well, because now these guys have something that we've had. And that's power.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Saban ran out of college athletics.
Oh, bro, he Usain bolted out of college athletics.
Because he couldn't handle, and a lot of these guys can't handle because it's changed the way you recruit.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, it gives players a say now.
Yeah.
And Saban was the guy that was like, this is my program. I'm going to run it the way I want. If you want to play at Alabama, win championships, and go to the NFL, you know what you're going to do for 2 years? You're going to sit on that bench and be tackling dummies in practice, and you're going to do what I fucking tell you to do.
And maybe.
And then, yeah. And then when NIL hits, and he saw guys are not going to Bama Because why would I sit there and take a verbal ass whooping every day?
Mm-hmm.
Being third on the bench, which means my name, image, and likeness is going to be dog shit. I'm going to go to this other school, right? Where I can start immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And my face is out there. And maybe I'm not getting like a Nike deal, but this kid, you know what he might have? Car dealerships.
Yep.
Right? It could be local businesses. And let's face it, our, you know, companies like Under Armour keep rosters of folks. And they might only do two commercials a year. But you know what they made? Like 200K.
Oh, dude.
You know?
Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is going to be the first NIL athlete in the NFL. And he's the Kurt Flood of NIL. Because the beating this kid is taking in the media.
Yeah. The issue with Caleb, and I love him. I think he's going to be great for Chicago because that's we all know who's going to Chicago. I think it's his dad and his group of advisors that maybe run their mouth a little too much, and Caleb's going to be the one that takes the beating in the
like Tebow.
Yeah. You know, like when his dad says, no, any team that drafts us has to look into making us a part owner of the franchise. Yeah. And Caleb was like, nah, dude, because you know what Caleb did? He went and read the rule book. You cannot be an active player and mm-hmm. own any portion of a team. Right. Like, and I think that's unfair to a kid in his early 20s who's already going to have the weight of an entire city on his back.
But do you also think because he's got this target on his back that how can I put this? Because you have the target on your back, everything you say is on the record. And I don't know if his quote unquote team of advisors or his father is used to being that in the spotlight that when you say off the record, or even if you're just talking in jest, everything is on the record now.
Yeah.
Because you're a story. The fact you paint your name, when the fact that you paint your nails, the fact you lost a game and cried, which I don't know why that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's again, we have to remind people that the NFL isn't scripted, but it's scripted. And when I say it's scripted, these games that you see have storylines. And the storylines are, for example, Cam Newton pouts when he does something bad.
Yeah.
So there's a whole storyline about Cam Newton and his attitude on the sideline. So you know if he throws an interception or they don't convert on a fourth down, the cameraman's job now the director's okay, pivot to Cam on the bench.
Yeah, pan. And see that was a shitty part about Cam's playing days because Tom Brady had a dedicated equipment manager for all the times he'd spike his helmet. For something not going right
mm-hmm.
on the helmet. He had an employee that went to school for this shit, graduated college or you know, maybe he was in the trades before, and they put out an ad
mm-hmm.
in fucking Massachusetts and Rhode Island and the New England region in general. And they're like, hey, do you want to work for the Pats? And they're all like, oh, fuck yeah, I work for the goddamn Pats. Let's fucking go. I love Tom. All right. Let's fucking I'll be there for the interview. I gotta go to Dunkey's real quick and get my fucking coffee. All right. And this guy shows up and they're like, listen, man, what's your name? Hey, it's Brian. All right. It's don't worry about the rest of it. Here's my resume. And they're like, wow, man, you got a lot of, you know what you're doing. Yeah. You know, so what's the gig? You are just going to follow Tom Brady around and make sure that nothing happens to his helmet. Oh, that's fucking easy. First game, by halftime, he's like, fuck this, dude. I'm going to quit. This is bullshit.
He's prima donna. He's a prima yeah. donna.
Right. Like, but somebody was hired
mm-hmm.
to work for an NFL team to do that, and nobody said shit about Tom Brady.
No, it wasn't part of the narrative they wanted to spin for the Patriots or Tom Brady. Another good example is, I don't know why I remember this for whatever reason. It was when the Raiders were winning, when the Gruden years, the early Gruden years.
Okay.
And Rich Gannon, who yelled at players all the time, was a competitor.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, he got run out of two franchises for that shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Vikings and the Chiefs. You know, and then he lands in Oakland as like it was essentially his last ditch effort to stay in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And Gruden loved that shit. Gruden eats that shit up. You know, he also does a lot of other things that aren't that great, but it's neither here nor there. But I mean, that's a perfect landing spot for you. But there's always a code, and you and I know this. There's always a code for a set of actions by a white player that the black player or the Latin player or the non-white player, they don't get that benefit.
Especially the younger athletes, I think, especially the younger quarterbacks, because I think when we think of black quarterbacks that were successful early in the league, a lot of the guys that talk about sports, ourselves included, didn't grow up in the mid to late 70s when there were a few more black quarterbacks playing and starting.
Yeah.
And the leash on them was really, really short. So we don't remember what sports talk conversation was. And there wasn't 24-hour sports radio like there is now. So that's also different. But that being said, the guys that we actually saw when they were playing, the Vince Evanses, where he had been in the league for 10 years. Aaron Brooks had been in the league for a bunch of years. Warren Moon spent 6 years in Canada before he goes to the NFL. So yep. These guys, by the time they get their starting gigs, Jeff Blake is another guy that, you know, had been in the league for quite a few years before he finally gets a starting gig.
Yep.
These guys were adults. They knew how to handle themselves. And they were kind of elder statesmen, and they were always treated like them as a black quarterback was representing the race. And yeah. There's no better example than that than maybe like a guy like Warren Moon, right? By the time you get to Cam Newton as the number one overall draft pick or even Michael Vick, it's a different kind of athlete. They're flashy. It's like that movie Any Given Sunday.
Yeah.
Kind of Willie Beeman.
Willie Beeman.
It's the Willie Beeman type athlete that we're getting. That being said, Cam Newton is not Michael Vick. They're worlds apart.
Yeah.
Worlds apart.
I mean, even then, you got to think their careers overlapped when Newton was taken first overall, right? And then, you know, Vic is at the tail end of his career. You know, mm-hmm. he's playing back up in Pittsburgh. You know,
Cordell Stewart.
Yeah. I mean, dude, Vic, I mean, a really sea change in the character arc, so to speak, right? Like mm-hmm. he was this really flashy, you know, balls out quarterback. And then we had the dogfighting crime, right? And he goes to prison, and he came out very soft spoken. And the one thing that he would pipe up about was actual protections for animals, which I give him mm-hmm. a lot of credit for. Like, this is a man who was like, dude, I fucked up. I have to change what I'm doing. And he did it and became, I think, a great ambassador for the game and to kind of show like, hey, man, like, go out there, have fun. But remember, don't do stupid shit like I did. That's what I really liked about the NFL when they let him come back. They lift the suspension. And he's the guy at the rookie symposiums that are like, listen, I am what you should not do.
I'm the guy you guys all are emulating. And I can tell you what I did wrong. And I think they listened to a certain degree because he had the Nike deal. He had the best commercial. Remember the commercial of Michael Vick's appearance? Michael Vick is still a highlight reel. And when you see the highlights of him in Philadelphia, it's kind of like watching Tyson and going, damn, the best years were wasted in prison.
Yeah.
And when you hear Michael Vick talk about, man, now I've read the playbook. I understood the game. It slowed down a little bit for me. But by the time you get to like Cam Newton and you get this kind of you start to get black quarterbacks that aren't athletes. Byron Leftwich is a great example. First round draft pick that
was the slowest quarterback in fucking NFL history. That guy did not move in the
pocket. No, he wasn't mobile. He wasn't mobile. And it just destroyed the whole idea of these guys being mobile. And you know, I watched the pro day of Michael Penix, and I think he ran like a 4.5 or a 4.640.
Yeah.
And people were all like astounded. Like, I was like, you know, but that's not his game.
Yeah, and on top of that, the fact that he can pull out a 4-5 or 4-6 with, you know, there's nothing in his knees that's actually his. You know?
We can rebuild him.
Yeah. No. But he's been the fast, like, he's the guy that whose name keeps going up the draft board right now, you know, and I think the team visits are only going to help him out. Like, the biggest knock you can give to Michael Penix is, in football years, he's old to be a rookie, right? I mean, he's not Brandon Whedon old or Chris Winkie old, but, you know, we're not going to see players like that anymore, and we've talked about this so much. You know, it's because young kids are specializing in a sport.
Yeah.
You don't have multiple discipline guys. And Whedon and Winkie both played pro ball, baseball, before they were like, fuck, we cannot hit a curve. We need to go back to college.
Drew Henson.
Yeah, Henson was another one. I mean, Henson at least got a cup of coffee in Major League Baseball, and that was because Steinbrenner wanted the buzz. Yeah. Henson couldn't hit off-speed pitching, you know, but yeah, man, like, I think getting back to, like, our Final Four teams, like, these are three or four dominant, and they have been dominant. Like, NC State's program has been on the rise over the last, like, 5 or 6 years. And I think it's great that both the men's and women's team for NC State, in a state where they're, like, they're not even, like, the little brother. They're, like, the bastard stepbrother that they're just, like the two siblings are playing, and they're, like, you go sit over there. We don't like your dad. We don't like that he's with our mom, you know? Like, and State fans walk around with a chip on their shoulder. And the fact that the two blue bloods, Duke and Carolina, don't have any dog in the fight in either tournament for men's or women's, I think that I find that very funny. So when I see people in, like, Carolina gear, I'm like, how's it feel knowing State's in and you're out? And they're just like, man, fuck you. You know? But I mean, I think it's great. You have UConn, who, you know, Gino Auriemma has shown. I mean, I wouldn't say they had down years, because UConn doesn't really have down years. Like, a down year for him is, like, getting to the third round and not making it, you know, like, but, like, they have, you know, Paige Bucher, who's another phenomenal name, you know, and basketball player. You know, you have Caitlin Clark in Iowa. And I mean, I watched the WNBA when it started, because Cleveland had a team, right? We had the Rockers. And I watched Dawn Staley play, right? Outstanding player. I think she's an even better coach, though, right? Because she took South Carolina, which was just a really bad program, right? And they've just been in the running for a championship every year since she got, you know, down there. So, I mean, I saw somebody bitch that, look, on both sides, it's a 1 seed and a 3 seed. Okay, who gives a shit, right? Like, this is a phenomenal Final Four. Like, this, if the NCAA had, like, eyes in their head and a functioning brain in their skull, they would be like, bro, this is TV fucking money. That, like, your page and your let's just put it this way. The interns are getting paid because of this Final Four, right? The execs ran into the room and they're like, hey, interns, we're going to cut you guys a check at the end of this. And the interns are like, fuck yes. You know, like, you know, like, that's how good this matchup is. And I think it's going to be phenomenal. You know, I just, like, I like, for me, regular season of college basketball is boring, right? I watch it. I'm just kind of like, yeah, you know, we get to conference tournament time. That's when I'm a little more invested. And then we hit March Madness, where I'm just like, let's fucking do this. Let's go. You know, because, like, men's college basketball, it's very top heavy, right? Like, your amazing programs are going to be amazing. You know, you might have one that falls off a bit. You know, UConn fell off under Kevin Ollie and all the, you know, the NCAA violations. Arizona did the same thing for a little bit. But, you know, Dan Hurley went to fucking stores and look what he's done. You know, like, he's done a great job on the men's side, you know, getting them back to where they're used to being. You know, it's just like, men's college basketball, like I said, it's very top heavy. But in the women's game, you have dominant, you know, teams, you know, like UConn, Tennessee under Pat Summitt.
Tennessee, yeah.
Stanford. Right. Stanford, Notre Dame. But see, the thing is, the rest of it from the, you know, under that to the bottom, it's very competitive, right? Like, I think that's more compelling. That makes for more compelling regular season. And, you know, you have, again, more terminally online white conservative dudes that are like, well, did you see the score of the game? 52-48. Yeah, man, I saw it. It went down to the last second. Very exciting fucking game.
Yeah.
That's low scoring. Yeah, I also watched a men's game with Virginia in it that was 48-42 this year. Right?
Yeah. There's not much of a difference. Well, also I forgot to add this in my whole thing about, you know, women's athletics. So the emergence of more and more girls playing AAU, social media, and also the men's game changing. It's no longer under the rim. It's a lot more three-point shooting, which is what people said they didn't want to see with the women's game. Like, why do I want to see some chick post up? And yeah, well, now you see Steph Curry do it and you want to see him do it all day long.
Yeah. I mean, and that thing is, I think it's important that we realize that the men's game's transition and it's more run and spacing, right? Watch the women. Spacing's been their thing, but when you get a player like Angel Reese, right? Mm-hmm. Someone that can give you points in the paint, they get the ball to her. And the thing is, Angel Reese is fucking phenomenal at being able to back her person, like the woman guarding her down, mm-hmm. realizing I got my back to the bucket. Probably not gonna, this is like a 50-50 shot. Oh, fuck this. And she kicks it out and they just drain, you know, a mid-range jumper. Like, mm-hmm. We're seeing kind of like a combination of those two games, and the women are doing it better. You know, I mean, sorry, not sorry. You know, I just think that the women's game, while different, right, I think it's more competitive now than yes. the men's game. And I think that's probably what's also driving eyeballs to women's sports as well. Like, people forget, like, you know, we have the Professional Women's Hockey League that just started. There's no team names. They just have like their city on their jerseys. Mm-hmm. Because after all the shit show that was the women's pro leagues leading into the PWHL, like, they knew they had to change something, like the business model and the relationship with the players. So they have a brand new draft. They bring brand new franchises. And what they do is the team from Montreal went to Pittsburgh, right, to play a home game in Pittsburgh. They put 12,000 asses in the Penguins arena, you know,
damn.
Like, for women's hockey, right? And they're doing this as potential expansion sites. Is there a demand here for this game? Mm-hmm. Because it used to be in these smaller leagues, me and you can get together $2 million and just be like, hey, we're going to put a team in Fargo, North Dakota. And this league would be so happy because we just infused $2 million in an expansion fee, you know, into the league. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, we can make sure bills are paid for the next, you know, 8 months. Right now, because we dumped all our money into the expansion fee, what do we have? Well, we're writing checks that bounce, you know, or we can't keep up with, you know, little things. I don't know, like tape for their ankles, you know, before they put their skates on, you know, shit like that. And then our team folds after a year, right? Yeah. And then we have a whole roster of players that have to be, you know, put in a dispersal draft or, you know, whatever, you know. So instead of just doing that, you know, they're playing games in certain markets to see, is there, you know, a market for having a women's professional hockey league team here? And Pittsburgh, I think, is going to be, you know, high up on the list. You know, I think it's a smarter model than what we're doing. Like, what are our big four doing when if they want to expand? They look at markets that already had a team.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I look at it this way. If they lost a team, you don't need to put another one there, right? And by lost, I don't mean like the owner just picked up and moved. It's like the city, like, let's face it, whether we want to admit it or not, a sports team is a partnership between a rich white dude, typically, who owns the team in the community they play in. Mm-hmm. So they want me and you to go watch games, right? They have to make it as enjoyable as possible. You know, so that's why you're seeing guys like Steve Ballmer fully padded seats, right? Mm-hmm. There's not going to be the giant hanging TV in the center of the new arena. Literally, the whole back wall is going to be it.
Yeah.
You know, like the fan experience is getting better while they continue to raise ticket prices and all this shit. But if a team had marketed it its way or priced its, you know, itself to where the local community couldn't support anymore and go to games and buy the merchandise, they probably can't now, especially in this current economic climate we live in. So why would you put another team there? Granted, I love those like high-powered Sonics teams out of Seattle, but dude, that is not the place to ask people to drop $200, you know, per ticket, or $100 per ticket, or even $80 per ticket. Like if a bad team comes to town, you know, that is not the place you want to ask somebody who's barely making ends meet in one of the most expensive cities in America, you know, to live in. You know, they're going to be like, pass, dude, I got to pay rent. I got to keep my lights on. I got to get my water paid. I got to buy groceries. You know, it's just, I think you should start looking at other markets to place teams, whether it's men's or women's sports, to where people are actually going to be there and be able to support financially and other things. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of crazy, but like we're seeing a market for a lot of women's sports, the NW, National NWA. Women's. No. Oh, the NWPL. Well,
the NWA says.
Yeah, the National Wrestling Alliance, which is still a thing, still kicking. Or we could be talking about Ice Cube and Dre and their buddies about what they think about women's sport. We should do that.
What we shouldn't do.
No.
Well, Ice Cube reached out to Caitlin Clark, so shout out to Ice
Well,
Cube.
Dude, I don't know if you saw, but Silver is getting ready to extend an invitation to Caitlin Clark to shoot in the NBA All-Star Game 3-point competition against Steph Curry. I think that'd be fucking, that would be rad as shit. Why not? Like, I don't understand. Like, let's face it. The NBA owns the NBA and the WNBA. Why not extend the invite to WNBA players to come and play, you know, in the All-Star Game? It's not like anybody's playing defense anyway.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you can literally bring back a draft, you know, let the two captains freaking draft players, and they can just be like, all right, I'm gonna take Steph with this one. I got, you know, we can get Caitlin in here, you know, just fuck it. It's supposed to be a spectacle anyway. Make it a spectacle.
I'd watch that.
I would too. Dude,
That'd be fun to watch.
Yeah.
I do want to pivot though. You before we even hit on baseball, because I know you want to talk Indians.
Guardians. It's the Guardians.
Oh.
All right, don't go all Varn on us.
I was like, Garvin was fucking. I was like, oh yeah. Oh. Before I get on what we're going to talk about, did you see that there are some native protesters that want to change the Washington Redskins name, or the Washington Commanders, back to the Redskins?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, we always, up in Cleveland, opening day, you typically have a group of indigenous people that were like, hey, it's not even the name that bothers us so much. It's the fucking logo. Chief Wahoo, easily one of the most racist logos ever slapped.
Pretty bad.
On a jersey. And you got to think, the one before the last one that they kind of phased out in the late 70s, even more racist than that. And that's saying something, okay? But then you'd have, like, the one dude from, like, the Menominee tribe, right? And that's, you know, they kind of, at their highest point, they were in, like, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, right? In parts of Canada. But it's a very small nation. But, like, the former owners, before Dick Jacobs bought the team, essentially paid this dude. And he put the money that he got from the Cleveland baseball team into his tribe. And they would pay him just to come out and say, you know what, I'm not really that offended by the name or Chief Wahoo. You know, it's just a caricature. Right. And he would be out there by himself, or like with his wife saying it. And like the other group of protesters would just be like, bruh. So, you know? Yeah. You know, but like there's always going to be people like, if I think it would have been better if they would have done like Florida State did. Florida State went to the Seminole Nation and said, listen, you know, the NCAA came out with this rule. We have to change our name. But would you be willing to let us continue to use Seminoles? Because one, we're not using like a caricature of an indigenous person. We literally have a ceremonial sphere on our helmet, right? And it would be honoring you, right? And the Seminoles were like, fucking bet, bro. Like, sure, right? If Washington would have done that and went to something like maybe like the Warriors or something like that and just used a less racist logo, I think they could have rocked on with like.
Well, that was the thing. They said that their logo, the Washington now Commanders, when they were the Redskins logo was a specific chief.
Yeah.
And what I read was, oh, this is a specific chief you were honoring with that logo, and we want to bring that back.
Well, I mean, you could say that it's similar to the Chicago Blackhawks, right? Mm-hmm. And the Lakota, Dakota, and Blackhawk Nation all have been trying to get that shit changed for probably the last 30 years. And the Chicago ownership groups pretty much just like get bent, not doing it, you know? the lobbyists. I mean, see, that's why like when it was the Guardians, when they're like, okay, I was hoping they would go with the Spiders, right? And that was like the National League Cleveland team from the late 1800s into the early 1900s. You know, I would have been down with that, right? Mm-hmm. So when I saw it was Guardians, I was kind of like, man. And then they put the logo out and it was like this baseball with wings on it. And I'm like, and I was like, dude, that is a minor league logo. I was like, what the fuck? And then they put the Y out, you know, they put, this is why we did it. Right. You know, the two, we have this giant bridge over the Cuyahoga River and the two pillars are the guardians of transportation. Right. That's why they named it that. And I was like, okay, well, it's something Cleveland. So I'm down. You know, I'm all right with that. Dr. Claw, if you say Cleveland Indians now, I'm thinking about Mr. Patel next door.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And what Dr. Claw is meant to say was that would be the guy in the office next to his in the hospital. You know, the surgeons, Dr. Claw. Right. They work
Dude,
together.
If we ever get sick in the Cleveland area and Dr. Claw is our doctor, I would. Ugh. That's how I'd know that there's a God.
Like, oh, no dude. Way. I mean, he hasn't confirmed or denied being a doctor. So I'm thinking he's keeping it quiet because he is and he doesn't want anybody to kind of like narrow down.
Oh, dude, the fact that he watches this show. Oh, fuck. That ruined his whole shit.
Oh, yeah. No,
keep that a secret, brother.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm going to keep trying to guess your specialty. But I'm going to go ahead and say that I know it's not oncology. You know? I think he's a sports doc that works for Cleveland Clinic.
Oh, what if he was? Dude, Dr. Claw, he's like MT. Like, no one will ever know MT. We were talking about bringing her to the DC show, and it's in a really small room. And I was like, I don't know if we could do it because it's a really small room. She's like, yeah. I was like, but, you know, you could just be there and no one would fucking know.
Yeah, dude, she could just sit at the bar.
Oh, dude, no one would know.
Yeah,
no one would know.
I mean, maybe your commentary on her beautiful hair might give it away. They'd be like,
Oh, yeah. It depends which MT you get. If you get MT that's got her hair done, or if you get, you know, Janet Jackson from Good Times, MT was just water and grease. You don't know which way. MT's hair is like a box of chocolates.
Never know what you're going to get.
So, depending on which one comes to DC.
Oh, man. I mean, when I went up to DC a couple years ago, people were still like hella wearing masks. So, like, she can just throw one on her face.
She, for New York, she wore the MF Doom mask.
Yeah.
So. And she wore that during the whole show. And then I think when we all went to the bar afterwards, like kind of like after people left, she took it off. And then we were just chilling at the bar. We went to a bar after the live show, which yeah. We're supposed to be doing something afterwards. But in general, like she talked to this one lady. I actually just left this a really nasty comment recently. She talked to this one lady like the whole night with the mask on. Like she refused to take the mask off. She just does not.
You know what? I respect the commitment to the bit. I do. You know, it's just like people ask, like when I was like still streaming, you don't know history and all that stuff. Like, I never once, like, even when I got my Twitter account, I never once tried to hide who I was. I'm like, dude, I was in a fucking documentary. My face is out there. Like, I can't roll that back now. You know, you know, I'm out. Like, you know, and people just literally ask, they're like, the shit that flies out of your mouth. And, like, I've had people drive from Mississippi to come to my home in North Carolina to kill me because I'm a snitch who testified against a war criminal. You know, they're like, you're not worried about that happening again? I'm like, let it. You know, let it. I can't stop somebody from making a horrible mistake about trying to come to my home and fucking with me. Right? I can't help if people are that dumb. You know, and I'm not saying that to be cocky. I can handle myself. And you know what I still do every week? Go to the range. Doesn't matter if I have to eat ramen noodles that week. I'm going to buy ammo and I'm going to go shoot. My skills are still up on point. So go ahead. Come on down.
Just one of those things you have to do.
Yeah. You know, this is a Castle Law state. So go ahead. I'm going to let you put like your shoelace inside my door jam. And then I'm just going to let you have it, bro. I'm not going to confirm what that is, but I'm going to let you have it. So I'm just saying. He toast that drink. But yeah, man, I mean, I get it. Like, I've got friends that do editing for like big podcasts. And well, I mean, is that bad? Like, it's either white folks underseason their food or they overseason it. Which one is it? Okay?
Oh, dude, white people overseason. let's finish the show and then we'll talk about overseasoning white people because this is becoming a fucking problem.
Oh, dude, is it?
Oh my God. Ooh, okay, oh my God.
Let's talk some baseball.
Well, but wait, before we talk baseball, we're going to talk stadium.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So big stadium updates here, guys, since, you know, this is what we do now after I led what I thought a pretty rad show with a pretty rad dude talking about the net negative of publicly funded stadiums. Kansas City last week voted down a ballot measure that would have added like a 3% tax to raise public funds for the Chiefs and the Royals. So, like, literally, the people in the county and Kansas City itself are like, fuck no. We're not going to kick in money to a billionaire, you know, who, let's face it, would only probably kick in like 10 or 15% of the overall cost, but then demand 85% of the revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Wizards are no longer going to Northern Virginia, guys. That I props to the state senator, a tiny old black woman who just kept voting no. And she's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. That's a waste of money. And the governor of Virginia, Youngkin, was just like fucking irate. He's like, this is the will of the people of Virginia. They want professional basketball and she is stopping it. And it's like, dude, the Wizards have been part, like, they're an ingrained part of DC. Like, they just are, you know, and Dr. Walton talked about that at length on that episode, right? You can't call them Washington anymore if they moved to Northern Virginia. They have nothing to do with DC anymore, you know? So, like, they already, like, building Capital One Arena displaced like 6,000 Chinese people that lived in Chinatown, right? So, you've already displaced a ton of people. And then you make the entire area dependent on the arena for jobs, for work, you know? And whether you like, you know, Republican or Democratic politics, well, Democratic politics in DC, right? At least, you know, the mayor was like, we need this. We need these teams here because so much of the economy around Chinatown revolves around that fucking stadium.
It's like Oakland when all those teams had the big exodus. It hurt everything. It's not just the team. It's the offices of the teams that are there that go to the local Denny's and you know, all that was affected. There's a reason why there was a big thing in the news. It was a front page thing in the newspaper. The only in and out, the only in and out in Oakland shut down. Well, yeah, it was right by the Coliseum.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know if you saw what happened today. The city of Oakland offered to extend the A's lease for 5 years, right? Mm. And allegedly, the new stadium in Vegas will be built in 3. And I say allegedly because no ground's been broken yet.
Yeah.
Right? And the A's have very favorable terms now, like stupidly favorable terms. Well, the mayor's like, if you want to stay, you're going to have to pay the city of Oakland $73 million a year to use the stadium. Because we're going to put money into it to make sure fans have an enjoyable fan experience at Oakland A's games. And, you know, that tight-fisted twat that owns the Oakland A's was like, oh, no, it's a little too rich for my tastes. So I'm going to go look at Salt Lake City and Sacramento for temporary homes. Mm. If he goes to Sacramento, you know what the A's get to keep? Their regional TV money. Mm. Okay? They get to keep that. Because California is busted up into chunks.
Yep.
So essentially Oakland, the A's have Oakland and north up towards Sacramento. Mm-hmm. The Giants have San Fran and then south. Right? So they kind of split the market, dividing, you know, by the bridge. Okay? If they go to Salt Lake City, you know what they don't get? Regional TV money. They don't get any of it. Right? And I'm like, one, why the fuck would you want to play outside in Salt Lake City in the summer?
Number one.
You dumb idiot.
Ugh. Number one, why would you want to do that? Yeah.
Yeah. And two, why would you be willing to give up $20 to $25 million every year when you're claiming that being in Oakland is depriving you of revenue? It just makes no sense. It goes into the entire hypocrisy of a billionaire owner asking for public money to build a new stadium. And the city of Cleveland's dealing with it right now because Jimmy Haslam, who is the fourth richest owner in the NFL, okay? And now keep in mind, everybody, the NFL's franchises are worth more than EPL franchises. The most watched sport on the planet, right, is English soccer. That can't be denied. People in the United States wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning to watch EPL on Peacock. Like that, it's just fucking fact, right? But NFL franchises are worth more. You know, NFL franchises are ridiculously like prized objects now. That's why so many of these billionaires, when they see somebody that's like, hey man, you hear Jerry Richardson like sexually harassed like multiple staffers down in Charlotte? Dude, man. There was a line of private planes landing, you know, in Charlotte, you know, at the airport, like, hey, Jerry, you know, it's, you know, the broads these days. Am I right? But still, you're going to have to sell. You're going to have to sell. I will offer you X amount of dollars. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the Washington sale. That team's been a fucking dumpster fire for 20 years. Over $7 billion, almost $8 billion.
Their last Super Bowl was what, over 30 years ago, 34 years ago, 33 years ago.
Yeah. They got almost $8 billion for that franchise.
Crazy.
And honestly, it doesn't have a stadium. You know, FedEx Field is considered fucking trash, you know, so they're looking at building another one. But, you know, Dr. Claw, exactly. Haslam bought the Browns for $1 billion. And now the Browns are worth over, I think, four now, according to Forbes. Absolutely nuts. But Jimmy Haslam wants the city to completely fund a dome stadium, which I agree with, and before anybody in chat comes for my fucking neck, if you play above the Mason-Dixon line, you need a dome stadium, and here's the why. You need to be able to use that thing more than 8 times a year. Mm-hmm. You need it for concerts. You need it for fucking monster truck rallies. I don't give a fuck, right? You need it to generate, you know, revenue at all times. And honestly, if you're going to be the one's foot in the bill, fuck yeah. Put a dome on it, use it more, bring in more revenue, we pay it off quicker. You know, that's just how it is, right? But Jimmy Jones is the one that kind of fucked the rest of his peers when he funded his own stadium. So that means he gets all the revenue, right? Makes sense. The other owners don't have Jimmy Jones fucking money. They just have their own fucking money, right? Like, honestly, Haslam probably could fund his own stadium. He just doesn't want to, right? So he wants to pull the Browns out of downtown Cleveland and move them to Brook Park, where the fucking airport is, where there is no fucking parking. People think the parking shit in Cleveland is bad. Wait till you get to Brook Park, and you're parking 2 miles away. You know, like, it's just the infrastructure is not out there to support it. One, and two, you know, people like going to games in Cleveland, right? Because you know what happens when you leave the stadium, Jason? You're literally, I can throw a rock and hit a bar, right? I can throw a rock and hit a fucking rad restaurant, you know? Like, and I'm not talking like I gotta like do a jump hop to get
torqued. Well, no, that's the thing about modern stadiums is that, you know, look at Pac Bell Park or whatever the hell you people call it.
You people.
Yeah, I mean, I mean niggers. That's what I mean. Talking about niggers.
Or
indigenous.
The Vard word.
But Pac Bell, they built a whole community, and then you got an extra stadium in that same area where there was nothing. It was, you know, a lot of this landfill. But there's hip bars, there's cool hip housing, there's shopping areas. Cincinnati's the same way with their downtown, but Seattle's the same way with their downtown parks, right? There's all this fun stuff to do downtown, and it's on the water, and it's so cool. Like you said, there's a fan experience in it. Oakland, for example, they've never built anything there. The one thing that Oakland has that's awesome is there's an exit that takes you directly into the parking lot if you're going to an event there. And our subway system, Bay Area Rapid Transit, BART, takes you right to the stadium. You just walk over a little concrete bridge into the stadium. Those things are cool. But after you leave, there's nothing there. But literally the projects. Candlestick was the same way. There was nothing there other than housing. So to get a stadium downtown, I get the appeal, and I've, you know, seen these beautiful stadiums in these downtown areas. I'm like, oh yeah, this is how the other half lives, huh?
Well, dude, yeah, the thing is, it's like during the 70s and 80s, before we really had the big stadium booms, you know, we had cookie cut multi-purpose stadiums, right? Mm-hmm. So football and baseball shared a stadium, and hockey and basketball shared one. Mm-hmm. And like I've talked to Dr. Claw, you can back me up on this. We had the Richfield Coliseum, where the Barons played multiple times because they had various iterations of the team. The Lumberjacks played there too. But it was out in Richfield County, which was like an hour away from Cleveland. And like I've said, it's off of a highway. You still have to drive into the woods to get to the parking area where you have just this forest with a fucking NBA arena dumped in it. Right? Like it's fucking, it was a surreal experience. So when Gordon Gund got permission to build Gund Arena, now Quicken Loans, right? Downtown, he was like, thank God. you know, like, because like I said, it's in the woods. So the stadium's out there, but where's all of the Cleveland Cavaliers offices and medical staff based out of downtown Cleveland? Right? Like it's not. Jesus. You know, it's not, they're not near each other. So when a player had an injury, like the nearest hospital was like 40 minutes away.
They choppered him there.
You know, like
get in the chopper. Yeah.
Like, you know, EMT staff is like, oh, fuck, the Cavs are playing tonight. I hope nobody does anything. Hey, Jimmy, you got to head out to Richfield. There was a broken leg. God damn it.
Hope like you didn't bumps on the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like not lit. Like Dr. Claw can tell you.
Oh, fuck. God forbid there's bad weather that night.
Oh, bro, you are not even fucking kidding. It was awful. Awful. You know, see, Dr. Claw knows exactly what I'm fucking talking about. It was a horrible.
You know why he knows? You know why he knows, Mac? Because he's the doctor.
He's the doctor. Dr. Claw's over there like, God damn it.
I've been outed. Maybe they know me by my melodious voice. Can you woo woo woo?
You know what that smell is? That's called scotch.
Speaking of baseball, dude, someone's talking about the vet in Philly. Talk about turf. God, watching people get ate up on ground balls on turf,
dude.
Especially when the Phillies played.
You know what terrified me as a kid when they'd go to like ground level views and like
the turf, and you see it all fucked up.
I'm like, there's no way this can be good. And then I had the pleasurable experience of playing on a turf field in high school. And my coach was like, no gloves on your hands, no tape. We're not here to look cool. You're here to play football. And I'm like, one, that's dumb as fuck. Arc season extends into November in Northeast Ohio. This is the dumbest shit I've ever heard of in my life. And for that game, he's like, all right, guys, the school got together. We got you some gloves. And you know the big tape that they put over their elbows?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're gonna put that on both sides of your arms. And we're just like, what the fuck? And the first time I carried the ball, I got hit from behind. So I immediately just fall forward, cover the ball. And dude, I was like, I'm playing on concrete. I'm playing tackle football on concrete.
That was the knock on turf, right? It's like, dude, it's like playing on concrete. And when you would watch, you know, going back to baseball, routine ground balls and dudes just getting ate up.
Oh, dude, yeah, because you gotta think. Grass field, you actually have like clay, grass that slows down the momentum of the ball. On turf, though.
That's like playing in the street.
Yeah.
You ever play grounders in the street?
And then you have like the rocks that are on this professional field. It's just like it is playing in the street.
You just look like an abused victim. Just bruises all over. Like, what happened? You need to call CPS? Nah, we was playing grounders in the street because we're stupid kids that don't know how a park works.
Yeah. But I mean, this is what kills me about turf is, you know, we have the World Cup and the United States, Canada, Mexico are all sharing host duties. And the NFL stadiums that are hosting games, you know what they have to do, Jason? Switch to grass, because FIFA rules state you can only play in grass field stadiums. So they're gonna tear out that field turf, you know, the shit that looks like grass and has like all the rubber pellets in it.
Yeah,
they're gonna tear that out, lay down sod, grow grass for the World Cup, and then tear the grass up and lay.
Oh, they're like, we're not keeping it.
Yeah.
Damn.
They said it's too expensive.
Water schmatter.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you can get into turf grass management, it's one of the best fields you can get into, because starting salary for that is about $120,000 a year.
Wow. How many deadly weed killers are you exposed to?
Well, I mean, now you got to think, people go to school for it's a 6-year program. It's not even a 4-year program. It's a 6-year program. And I had a dude I went to high school with that went to Penn State. It was one of 3 colleges in the United States that offered turf grass management as like a major. And he worked for like a Major League Baseball team and 2 NFL teams for like 10 years and made a shit ton of money. And then he's like, well, I got fuck you money. And he like retired and then just moved to where was it? I think it was Dunedin down in Florida. And he just worked the single A teams, single A baseball team there, their field, for like nothing. He got like $5,000 a season. He's just like, yeah, I just like doing it. It's nicer here, you know? So yeah, turf grass management, if you're looking at a career change, might be something to look into. But yeah, man, like those turf fields were awful. I'm glad Major League Baseball were like, you know, they were like, we really have to, Get to grass.
Well, dude, who else had
turf? You know, get to grass.
St. Louis had bad turf. Who else had bad
turf? Pittsburgh had bad turf. Cincinnati, Philly.
Atlanta?
Did they have turf? Fulton County? Yeah, Fulton County had turf, but when they moved to Centennial Park or, you know, whatever it became after the Olympics, that was grass. Professional turfs?
Oh my goodness.
we have the best fans.
Can I just say that this show is always a treat. I tried to say this last week and I will say this again. This show is a treat to do because I get to do it with crazy ass Mac. And I wish you had more of an open schedule so I could get you on the TIR regular show rotation more.
Oh man, I do too, because I always have fun. I have to kind of get over like my, oh man, Pascal's here. don't say anything stupid, dude. Do not say anything stupid when Pascal's here, because he was gonna eat my lunch, you know.
I'll let you know later. There's some things we're doing in the TIR world that I'm gonna need your help for, though. But about Major League Baseball, you're a big Major League Baseball fan. You're a big Cleveland Guardians fan.
That's right.
I said it right this time.
Yes.
As the season's rolled out.
We're week in. I'm pretty excited about
one thing we haven't talked about is the Ohtani situation.
Yeah. I mean,
you want to explain what it is?
Okay, so, you know, Shohei Ohtani, who is an otherworldly baseball player, leaves Japan, signs with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, which I think was a stupid name, and just because you dropped
Anaheim. It's the worst name ever.
Yeah, it doesn't mean I don't get to make fun of you now, even though you've dropped it. You deserve
all it's like the New York Mets of Jersey.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah, that's
what... it makes sense.
You know, actually, you know, I'll get to that later, never mind. But, you know, so Ohtani doesn't speak English. He doesn't speak it well enough to his standards to want to give interviews. So he has an interpreter. Freaking almost every player that's come over from Japan, like Hideo Nomo, who was the phenom for the Dodgers in 96, he throws a no hitter his rookie year in LA and gives his, you know, the entire press conference through his interpreter. You know, and the thing is, he spent, I think, 14 years in Major League Baseball and never once really did an interview in English, even though he's very proficient in it now. I think a lot of people are just very self-conscious when they pick up English as a second language. And then, you know, you're in these.
Any language.
Yeah.
My problem with speaking Spanish is I'd say if you say the wrong thing in front of the wrong person, they really make you feel stupid.
Yeah. I felt like that when I was like learning French. And I went to Quebec, and you know, they were like, you know, essentially like, you're speaking what they speak in France. We speak Quebecois. And yeah. I'm like, okay, fuck off, dude.
Yes. Like, thanks for making this comfortable.
Do you have Quebecois on Duolingo? No. So shut the fuck up. You're getting traditional French. But come to find out, after all these years he's been with Ohtani, he had been stealing money from him and racking up giant gambling bets. Like, I don't know how much an interpreter typically makes. But if you were for Major League Baseball player, I expect you are pretty well compensated and you, like, your travel's covered and all that shit. But this dude racked up $4.5 million in gambling debt.
Say that again. His interpreter racked up $4.5 million.
$4.5 million in gambling debts. And I come to find out, I asked a friend, I was like, is gambling like frowned upon in Japan? And he's like, listen, dude, we have places where you can go gamble, but you typically don't see big money bets, right? Like, you don't see somebody throw down, like, you know, they're a 4-run, you know, underdog. You're not going to go in there and throw down 15 grand, right? You might throw, like, down $100, okay? But this guy racks up $4.5 million in debt. So, like, he's, you know, essentially, like, a big embarrassment to his family, you know? And in Japan, it's a very like patriarchal, like ancestor veneration type of culture. So like this dude was essentially stealing money from Ohtani to cover down on his debts. So his family didn't figure it out. And like, anyway, they saw some irregularity, like accounting irregularities. And that's what kind of tipped people off to start investigating. Right. So they Major League Baseball did an investigation and cleared Ohtani. Now I get it, like, oh, he's the new golden boy of Major League Baseball. Like, of course they're going to clear him. Ohtani was shocked when he found out and has said so in multiple press conferences. Like, he didn't talk for a while after the news broke. But then he was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and just get out in front of this. And he was just like, I was shocked. He was a member of my family. He was my interpreter for so long, you know? So, like, it's a big kind of black mark to go into this.
And you don't think this is Ohtani using this dude as a scapegoat for his own gambling problem?
No. Ohtani knows that, especially coming off signing the largest deal in Major League Baseball history, right? $700 million. You know, we've talked about the contract before. Most of it's deferred. So he won't make his entire paycheck until like 20 years after
the he's backloading it so he can help the team. And just to give people kind of an idea about how trusted people in your life can steal your money, comedian Dane Cook, who I want to preface this by saying I'm not the biggest fan. I have a certain level of respect for him. You know, he used the MySpace game first and really kind of blew up off social media. But also, he's trusted his brother. I think they're half brothers. It managed his career, and that dude ended up stealing millions from him.
Yeah.
Millions from him. When you make a certain amount of money, and this is, I think this is hard for people to understand, and this is the best way I can explain it. I was in a room with a band called The Almost. And The Almost is the drummer from Under Oath's side project.
Okay.
And it was their first show in Anaheim at a place called Chain Reaction in Anaheim. And I was hanging out with them there. And their manager was there. And he managed all the big scene bands at that time. And he was talking to them about, they were real open. I was like the fly on the wall that got to hear a lot of business conversations. And they were talking about money, and he was doing that manager thing, like, oh yeah, but you can't play there with The Almost, but Under Oath's gonna play at this place and this place, and they're getting, you're talking about the year. And he was explaining where they were gonna play and like how much money they were gonna get. But that you don't see it.
Yeah.
And he was telling me, he goes, well, you have to incorporate yourself at a certain point. And I was like, well, when is that? He goes, when you start playing 3,000 seat rooms, you need to be incorporated. When you're bringing in more than $100,000 a year or a month as an act, you should probably incorporate at that point, because you're making too much money. And I was like, and I looked at, you know, I'm looking at my friend, I'm like, God damn. You know, you're wearing a used thrift store shirt. Like, okay. But you have so many expenses when you get to that level. That bus is like $1,500 to $3,000 a week. You're probably staying in hotels. Even if you're staying on the bus, you have to pay for a hotel for the bus driver. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
That's the rule. Lighting. There's just expenses that you don't see. A friend of mine that's a musician, for years he worked for the company that handled the mail for big artists like Metallica and Green Day. And I won't say the band because I don't want to out my buddy, because he would tell us some funny stories. But a very famous rock and roll band. At one time, their outspoken member, I won't even say what instrument he plays, so you would know who it is. I mean, I'm going to type it. You're going to know who it is. Their wife had a bad furniture purchasing habit, and he had no idea that she had a warehouse filled with ridiculously expensive furniture. They don't even see their mail. So the idea that $1 million can go and this guy never see it, most people go, how can that? Trust me.
Yeah.
You don't see anything anymore. Everyone has their hand in your pocket, and then you can talk about how you don't trust people and you're going to do this and you're going to do that. F you. You've never made that much money. You've never seen the way it comes in, 9 different ways to Sunday.
Yep.
It happens entirely too quick. Trust me.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, it's like when you start making, especially like Major League Baseball, guaranteed salaries, these are the best players or best paid players in sports in the United States, right? The only comparable league, again, is the EPL, or I shouldn't say EPL, but top tier European football, mm-hmm. right? That's why you see guys like Ronaldo who go to play their sport in a backwater league in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. But what is KSA paying them?
Yeah.
He's making like he plays 18 matches in the Saudi league. and he makes, I believe it's like $200 million.
Jesus Christ.
Right? So it's just like, dude, he's one of the most recognizable athletes on the planet. He's made a ton of money, you know, in various stints from, you know, Spain and England. But he was like, dude, $200 million to go play against dudes who would never even be on the field with me in the EPL. Sure. Yeah. You know, like it's nuts. But like when you start making that kind of money, like you said, you have people that handle your paychecks. Right.
Every aspect of your life. I honestly didn't know what my buddy did. We would be on tour all the time. He was in another band. And one day I was like, Mike, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I work for this company and we handle all these people. I was like, are you serious? Like, do you talk to people? He's like, yeah, all the time. And he started telling us all these stories about how these dudes, sometimes it would take them years to find out. Also, keep in mind, these guys all have, I'm talking about really, really, again, when you're at a certain level of wealth, when you're the Otanis of the world, when you're Mick Jagger, you have a effed tail. You have so much money. You have a black card. You just go out and do shit all the time. And if you, and when you're older and you have a significant other, that person is spending all your money.
Yep.
We're not even talking about people within your organization stealing from you. I'm just talking about the things I've heard about these people's significant others racking up ridiculous amounts of money. And another thing to keep in mind, from less the athlete end, but more like the musician end, some of these guys didn't have much when they came up.
Yeah.
And then one day, again, remember, all of Metallica lives in the house together, and then one day they don't.
Yeah, next thing you know, they've got fucky money.
They got fucky money. And it just happens one day. It just happens to you one day. And, you know, you still have that mentality of I'm the guy. Lars Ulrich still goes over every expense because he knows that when he walks in the door, people know who fuck he is and he's got fuck you money. He's like, I pay whatever everybody else pays. You don't charge me more money.
Yeah.
Which, you know, go ahead.
That's the shitty part, is that this dude, you know, one, he's playing in a country he hasn't been exposed to much, and like his exposure is the sport he plays. And you know, he's gonna be like Otani has shown, he's a transcendental player. Like there's just nobody like him.
Yeah.
And he does everything so well on a baseball field, you know? And that's why the Dodgers fucking bent over backwards. You know, to give him that deal, you know, and Otani knows, hey, I still want to be on a competitive team. And even though the Dodgers literally just print money, you know, I'm pretty sure down at Chavez Ravine, they've got a fucking, you know, a plate system where they just make new bills when they want to like bring in a player. It's like the Federal Reserve West is not in Los Angeles proper. It's in Chavez Ravine.
Jesus Christ.
You know,
more horrible things have happened to that place.
You know, but to help out the team, he's like, yeah, we'll just defer 80% of it, because he's like, I'm going to make a ton of money off of endorsements, you know. And can we just say how fucking weird this country is, where some of our biggest endorsed athletes do not speak the language, right? Otani, a lot of the hockey players, especially ones that come from Eastern Europe, that, and I'm not talking like the Nordic countries, but like, you know, we're going to like Lithuania, Latvia, Russia, they don't speak English well. Like Alex Ovechkin is one of the greatest hockey players of all time. The dude still can barely speak English, and he's been here for like 20 years, you know? So, several massive bank transfers were part of, the gambling debt. But like, this is what, you know, brought the red flag up, because like, you're absolutely right, DF. Banks are going to be like, yo, wait a minute. Why is this money being pulled out? Where is it being transferred to? You know, there's a lot of things. You had a really good journalist. You had the banks asking questions. And that's why, like, we're not ever going to really get the whole story to come out off jump, right? It's going to take time to parse those details and picture get the entire picture of what happened. And it sucks. Like, I genuinely think Otani probably just wants to play ball. That's what he wants to do. You know, and he wants to make New Balance commercials. And I'm like, if I had anything to say to Shohei right now, it would be, of all the shoe companies, you went with New Balance. Your biggest purchaser of New Balance are like 40-year-old white dude dads who need something comfortable to wear.
Hey,
I'm learning.
You want to hear something? I don't know if your kids are up on this. There's the old man New Balance that you're talking about is a preferred shoe for younger people. They call it the grandpa.
No fucking way. Really.
I wish I was lying to you.
That is amazing.
They're like, dude, I got the grandpa. And they know the name of it, like the XB22, the grandpa.
See, my son has become a sneakerhead. Like, he's constantly looking at sneakers. And he, like, doesn't ask for any of them, right? Like, he's just like, Dad, check this out. And he loves the old Air Force Ones. Like, low top. He's just like, those are my
favorite. I can get him some bootleg ones down here. That's dope.
Yeah. We got him a really nice pair for Christmas. But he's just like, it's crazy because he's like, Dad, I got some black shoelaces. I'm going to like lace up my sneakers. I'm going to send you a picture. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he is he's a sneakerhead.
Just make sure he doesn't get the Edgar cut.
No.
Like I said, you nip that in the butt. Like, son, I'll let you do whatever you want to do. But right now, gone too far.
Well, he's got a beautiful head of hair. He's just letting grow out. And like, he can do this. And
oh yeah. Let him do that.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Well, what he wants to do is he wants to grow it long enough to do a braid, you know, and for like.
Oh, okay.
Right. And the thing is, it's like, he's got my hair. Like, when I had hair, it's really fine. It's not thick enough to like to braid properly. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, if you want to let it go that far, go for it, man. But I was just like, I don't know if you're going to be able to get the length you need for the braid, you know.
No broccoli heads in this. That's the one time Mac hits his kid.
That, and I see him start pulling out boxes of raisins. I'm like, you better stop it.
I was this dude. I was this close to taking a picture of me eating Mexican raisin bran, adding raisins in it last night. I was this close to doing it, and I was like, no.
No, you save it for OnlyFans. All right, that's if you guys want that kinky raisin content, you're gonna have to pay for it.
Just right? Shirtless. Shirtless, like, spray some water on me so it looks like I'm glistening.
Like, you get the milk that drips off, and you're just like, oh.
Like, man, a whole bunch of dudes just friended me on Instagram. I don't know what's going on. I'm calling Pascal. Hey, man, you get a whole bunch of weird dick pics in your inbox, too?
Jason, I don't want to talk about it.
This looks like a shirtless guy eating raisins. Just letting raisins just...
It's like the scene from Flashdance when she pulls it, the water just raisins that fall on you.
You know what's bad, Mac? I lived with those rats for so long that a few raisins dropped on the floor, and PTSD struck me. I started sweating.
You said you're on a first name basis with him, and you're like, hey, Bert, what's going on? He just like runs over, picks something up, runs out.
Those rats were so big, you said, excuse me, when they walked by. Motherfuckers were massive.
Dude, I almost shit myself when I went up to New York to do the Tribeca TV Fest when we were getting the documentary out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm out. Like, we did the showing. We had a little after party. So it's like 11 o'clock. Bars stay up until 4 a.m. in New York. So I'm like, you know exactly what I'm going to fucking do. So I went back to the hotel, I changed my clothes, and I'm walking. I stayed at this 5-star hotel, nicest place I've ever stayed in my fucking life, and it's off Broadway. So I'm walking down Broadway, I'm going to this pub called the Wolf Tone, and I see, like, you know, they got their trash piled up waiting for just the trucks. I don't know what the schedule for trash pickup in New York City is like, but it seems like it's a 24 hour thing, you know, like it's all day, every day.
It's not. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I see like this bag, you know, like shaking, and like me living in North Carolina, when that happens, it's typically because a raccoon got into your trash can, you know? And then I see this giant fucking rat.
Yeah.
That was probably the size of like a beagle. With a fucking slice of pizza in its mouth, just scampering. And I was just like, oh, fuck. And I get this dude stop, take out an earbud and go, new here, huh? And just put it back in and walk. Yeah.
New York, dude. We did this release. We've talked about this on air before. And people think that, I don't know if they think that we're joking, but it was me, MT, Cuba, Ben Burgess, fella that watches the show, Andy, Jordan Dubin was with us. I believe she, no, she wasn't with us. I take it back. That was a different time. She wasn't with us. Oh, it was Feldman's daughter, Hannah Feldman, David Feldman's daughter. Wrong white lady.
Y'all look the same anyway.
Only got my white women confused. Shouldn't do that.
No.
And Anders Lee.
Okay.
Anders Lee from Pod Damn America. And Anders Lee got us lost somewhere in fucking Brooklyn looking for some magical Mexican place that wasn't there. And we ended up going to some hood ass bodega. And then just the rest of the night I spent screaming because there were just rats just everywhere. We would just jump in. One was breakdancing on some cardboard. There was just fucking rats.
Had a bucket hat and a gold chain. Yeah,
like, rat came out. I was like, where the fuck you get little Deodorus that fits your little rat feet? You new here, huh, nigga? And he just started doing dun, 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 dun. Dude, the whole... I mean, it's the wee hours of the morning, just screaming because there's just rats.
Jason is screaming. Someone's like window unit AC broke, and he's like, "Shut the fuck up! I'm trying to sleep." I'm sorry, man.
Just fucking rats. Like, how do you people live like this? Dude, Andy and they thought it was fucking hilarious that I was great big. I'm like, dude, you don't understand. Rats in the warehouse. I was it. Dominated,
dude. New York is its own beast, man.
New Orleans also has a horrible rat problem.
Oh, too. Dude. Well, I hate to say it's because New Orleans, one of my favorite places to visit, but it's so far under the sea level. Like, it's just perfect living space for giant fucking rats.
It's where rats go vacation.
Yeah.
It's like Florida. It's like Florida for rats. Just old Jewish rats. Just rats.
Like the rat that talks shit to you was like, I gotta get out of here. The winters are killing me.
What is here? Horrible. We gotta go to New Orleans. It's great over there. And the food. Oh my God, the food. Those Cajun bastards know what they're doing, huh?
Hey, sweetheart, you ever had a beignet? You're gonna.
Just when you thought we couldn't get racist enough. No one's safe.
No one. Not even the rats in New York. Not that they need protection. They look like they take care of themselves just fine. But yeah, man, the guy made fun of me. And then like my two producers are from like New York. And they're just like, yeah, man, it's a like Paul played college basketball. And he's the producer for the Olympics. Like, he takes care of all the production shit for the Olympics and has since, like, 1988 or something, right? Mm-hmm. And he's, like, 6'8". And he's got, like, this beautiful head of hair. And it's, like, gray and white. And he's just – dude, Paul is, like, cut from granite, you know? Like, he's just got, like, this elegance to him. And, like, his wife, Sarah, was – like, we're walking. And she's, like, a little bit tipsy, you know? And she's, like – you know, like, oh, Mac, you know, that's nothing. And I'm just like, what? That was the size of a dog that I would put on a leash. And that's normal. And Paul's like, yeah, you know, you just if you leave them alone, they won't bother you. You know, and he's like really soft spoken. And so you're just like, I was like, fuck you, man. I don't want to be used to this. You're like, no.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're like, why would I want to get – what? There's certain things I can get used to. I got used to the scorpions here. I understand the circle of life.
Yeah. I mean, dude, that's what kills me. Like, Eric Adams is just like, yeah, people are stealing from, you know, the Metro. So I'm gonna put cops on overtime, and it's going to cost me, you know, another $300 to $400 million a year to make sure we crack down on people stealing fares. It's like, bitch, take that money and get some exterminators. Like, just stop it. Like, when I was in Afghanistan on the FOB, we would go out and find cats, and they would just kill the mice. And it worked. They got some good American cat food that we, you know, get sent over. They eat well, and then they kill mice. And I'm like, that is a perfect symbiosis right there, right? Like, you'd have to get tigers to attack the rats in fucking New York City, right?
Those two places, New York and New Orleans, it's just too much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, New Orleans, I feel bad for, because, like, you have Bourbon Street, which tourists just treat like a fucking
toilet,
you know, toilet. Like, when I went there for Mardi Gras, like, there were dudes that were like, yeah, I got to piss. And they just, like, turned to their left.
Yeah.
And just started pissing, dude, everywhere. And I'm like,
the guy that drew all the album covers for my band, La Femme Absolute du Monde, he still lives in New Orleans, but he used to live right off of Bourbon Street, like, right there.
Yeah.
In the middle of the quarter. And they got tired of it when one day they just got up to go to work. They're also artists in Jackson Square. And somebody was just pissing on his fence. And it's like, dude, I can't fucking live like this.
Yeah.
With people just peeing on my house all the time.
Dude, if I'm lucky,
that's what it is.
Yeah, dude, you gotta imagine. People are just, like, shitting out in the public too. Right? Like,
they're fucked up.
Yeah. They've
been throwing up everywhere.
Yeah, like, dude, that's what well, I was warned. Stay off the subway in New York. You know, homeless people use them like toilets. And I saw a dude piss in a corner. I'm not going to lie, but, like, you know, I went and saw one of my old soldiers, Charlie. He's from Charlie Guglielmo, right?
Is he Italian?
Yeah, very Italian, and he was a boxer too. So that's why I kind of, like, pulled him into my squad before he deployed. But I went up to see him. And he's like, yeah. And he keeps calling, like, hey, Sergeant Mac, yeah. And I'm like, dude, that's not my name anymore. I'm not in. I've done away with the need to have bourgeois title, right? And he's like, you really are a commie. That's fucking weird, you know? It's just like, all right. But he's like, yeah, you know, I was on this line a couple days ago, and I had to get up and move because this guy, I saw him pull his pants down, and he just sat. And he, like, when he got up, there was shit in the seat and smeared all over his backside. And I'm sitting there like, I'm sitting down and I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, when they had seats. So when they were rolling out, again, the subway system in the Bay Area, they wanted to make it more comfortable than riding in your car. So the seats, unlike New York subway, weren't hard plastic. They were plush. And around the time they were like, okay, maybe we should remodel these trains and blah, 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 make it more like what you see in places like New York. They wanted to take out the cloth seats. So they started doing it kind of slowly. And they found that there was so much fecal matter in the cloth seats that they couldn't wash it out. And usually when you see an escalator that's broke, not all the time, but usually when you see an escalator that's broke, it's because it's so much feces in it.
Oh.
So that's why you see the guys fixing it with hazmat suits.
Oh, man.
You know, if you ever want to just think to yourself, like, huh, what does a society in decline look like? Go hang out in any major metropolitan area for a second and go, I don't think it's right that everybody uses the outside like a toilet.
Yeah. Dude, I'm not going to lie. I don't like pissing outside anyway. I fucking hate it. Like, I'm of the mind where I go to the bathroom, and even if I'm pissing for a minute, that's 1 minute of quiet that I get in my day. I really enjoy my time where I don't have anybody –
dude,
that's
why I don't like leaving my house, because I live alone. Everything with the door open. I could just bait.
Okay, I'm gonna go visit Jason. He's gonna forget. I'm just gonna hear.
Well, Well, no, when people get here, I turn into Martha Stewart. I have to, you know, like,
I look over my right shoulder and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, like, oh, Jason. God,
he's Peyton again.
I can see the Frankie and the beans. Come on, man.
Like, dude, like living alone? Oh.
I can't wait.
Have you ever shit with the door open?
Oh, dude, when I had my own place all the time.
All the time. It's the most liberating feeling in the world. I was thinking to myself for 1 minute. I was like, man, it'd be really sad if I died alone. And then I thought to myself, but do I want to give up this open door shit policy that I have?
Yeah. It's going to be funny. You're going to finally meet that, you know, white yoga instructor. And you're going to have live, laugh, love, you know, above your couch on the wall. And you're going to be like, I can handle that. And then you just go in the bathroom and you just drop trowel and just rip like the nastiest fart. And you're like, it's going to happen. And she's like, oh my God, Jason, I forgot you were here. Shit.
Yeah. Like you ever, this is really bad, but this is the sports show where we can be ourselves. Do you ever have like horrible gas and you think to yourself, man, I'm glad I live alone because another person would really suffer right now?
Dude, when we first started the show, like in the first two episodes when it was me, you and Marcus, dude, I don't know what I ate, but like I kept having to like mute my mic because my stomach was like, you know. So I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like I'm feeling like shit. I'm trying to keep up with the conversation. And you literally, you're like, yo, Mac, what do you think? And I just hit my mute button and I was just like, and like I wasn't even like trying to hide it too. I just kept my face to, you know. And Marcus texted me. He's like, what are you doing?
Dude. I do all the time. Not every show, but a lot of shows, because I have a mute button. That, of course, you guys can't see. It's off camera. All the time. I try to time my meals way before showtime. But, like, today I couldn't. And, oopsie. Just, it's horrible.
Yeah.
There's so many air fresheners throughout my house.
Bro, the worst is, like, when you're rolling solo on a show. And you just have to shit. And you're just like, okay. I was going to show this video later on, like, especially when I was doing, you know, history. So I'm like doing a lesson, right? And I have to give you this information so you can watch the video and understand why Michael Collins is so pissed off when he's giving this speech. And I was just like, all right, guys, I'm going to fire up this video. And I do. And I was just like, oh my God. I was like, I know it's 12 minutes long. I could probably get this out in 10. And dude, I went and just, it was just like, oh, you know? I looked like fucking, what's his name? They're in Dumb and Dumber, where like my feet were off the ground and I'm just like, right? So I actually used like baby wipes on that one, you know, like it was miserable.
Dude, that's why.
And I got, hold on, I got back to my stream, right? And the video's wrapping up and I'm like, okay. And then literally someone in chat does a super chat. So like it plays like AI read it and I'm like, Mac, why are you showing us this? We don't even know who this fuck is. And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
And when you talk, they don't know that those dramatic pauses are just you ripping in fucking front. It's like, the world is a cesspool, America. Virtuoso says, you don't have incense, Jason? Oh. When Dubin and Burgess and Cuba and all those guys stayed here, I can't remember what they were looking for because I label everything in my house because I don't want people asking me questions.
Look, Raisin Bran, extra raisins.
I wish I could take the camera, but this is a stationary camera. But yeah, everything in my kitchen, the doors are all labeled so you know, like, oh, where's the bathroom? It's on the door. You know, everything. Also, it helps me learn Spanish, right?
And Jason's just like, can you read?
Yeah, can you read? It's in the drawer.
Yeah.
Where are your utensils? In the drawer marked utensils. Is all this in Spanish? Yes. Where are your cups? Where He-Man is. He-Man is cups. Skeletor.
Skeletor's plates.
It is plates. I'm not even trying to be funny.
She-Ra is where the pots and pans are.
Okay? No, it's Bordak. It's Bordak. Okay. From the bat, the Skeletor of the She-Ra universe is where bowls are. I'm being totally serious.
I think it's a very beautiful labeling system, Jason. Well done, sir. Well done.
But I do have an incense drawer, and they think it's people here think it's really funny because it's filled with incense and candles.
I mean, I burn candles because, like, I'm a dude who lives in North Carolina, and my roommate doesn't like using the AC in the summer.
Oof.
So I have like 5 fans, and I sweat when it gets 55 degrees. I sweat. I've just, even when I was fucking 60 pounds lighter, that's just my plight in life. I'm a sweater, right? So, you know, I make sure my room doesn't like smell like a foot. I wash a lot of laundry, and I fucking burn candles, man. Like,
oh, dude, I told you a woman came here one time when I first moved here. And I let her in. She was like, oh, this is nice. I was like, oh, what do you think? She was like, oh, you know, it smells like mildew. I was like, oh.
Ouch. Just like, she didn't give you the typical, you know, I mean, I smell something. I don't know what it is. She just went like right for the ball.
Oh, yeah. She was like, oh, like, well, this house is nice. She goes, what do you expect? She's like, what do you expect? I was like, I don't know you not to be a bitch. There's a whole bunch of things I expected.
You know what? My boner just went away. Get out.
It didn't, but still.
Don't let this bulge fool you. I am mad at you.
Like, hey, I'm not going to come back for a second round because it's going to hit me what you said after I ejaculate.
That's right.
But not until then.
I am like a squirrel. I will get my nut.
That I will, ma'am.
Madam, are you prepared to take this?
Where's the dude? Who is the dude whose girlfriend we tease? We keep asking that question. He doesn't come back. Did the girlfriend ban him?
Listen, I really want you to watch your shows and listen to your podcasts and just explore being you. But those two idiots that have a sports show and just talk about dicks all the time. No, you're better than that, sweetie. You are better.
Are they talking about shitting now? What the fuck, Thomas? It's not even a name.
Well, I know.
I'm fucking on the side. We just made her the worst woman.
Yeah, we did. And she's probably super sweet, you know?
She probably said it like this. Oh, are you watching your favorite show again? I'm so happy when you're happy. And we just shat all over that woman and made her the worst.
Just the
cigarette
worst.
Hanging out of her fucking mouth.
Got pearlers in.
Ashtrays all over the house.
She's got like whiskey and Coke and a coffee mug. So essentially, she's my Aunt Patty, right?
Why can't we have the kid's birthday party at the Carl's Jr.? Bitch, because it's 2024. That's why.
I'm not taking the kids for their birthday to Sonic to play on the volleyball court, okay? I'm not doing it. Oh, so we have to go to Chuck E. Cheese? I'm so sick of you. Hand Mama her ashtray. This one's about
to. Yeah, I can't smoke at Chuck E. Cheese. That's where we're going.
Aunt Patty, stop it.
Aunt Patty. His wife's name is Aunt Patty.
Like you described one of my aunts perfectly. Like the house coat, the like just the cigarette with the fucking 3-inch ash on it. She just. You know, whiskey and Coke and a mug. It's just like, Aunt Patty, we know you're not drinking coffee.
Yeah, like, can I smoke here? Is that okay? Okay, yeah, just please go out, way out.
Dude, when they met my high school girlfriend, my aunt lives in Modesto. So she flew out and just had, like, because my grandmother was getting ready to die. You know, I told you she had, like, Parkinson's. She wasn't doing well. So, like, we kind of, like, did this mini family reunion. And my girlfriend at the time came. So I'm 16 years old with my girlfriend who, like, had purple hair. You know, lip piercing.
Oh, she was the world to you, wasn't she?
Oh, God, she was too. Oh, she really was, man.
Scott Pilgrim. It was some Scott Pilgrim shit.
Oh, no, I wasn't not a bitch like Scott Pilgrim. I fucking beat the fuck out of that nerd. fucking rip that bass right out of his hands and beat him over the head with it. Fucking bitch. But like, we're in this basement, right? And like, my uncle had like all these old school beer cans like on the wall. That was like his aesthetic down in the basement. And he had like one of the old St. Pauli girls like posters up, you know, like it was just like a total bro cave. And like, my aunt's there just drinking, and like, my dad, who like, he likes to drink too, but like, he never drank at my Aunt Teresa's house, right? Like, it's just something he didn't do. And he's, you know, my dad's tall as fuck. He's like 6'4", and he's got this really deep voice. And he's like, Patty, you know, you don't think that you should maybe, I don't know, not drink right now? Like, we're here for mom. And she's like, listen, it's coffee. And my girlfriend like bends over and sniffs it. She goes, it smells like there's more whiskey in there. And she's like, who the fuck are you? You know? I was like, Aunt Patty, this is my girlfriend, Lisa. And she's like, she looks at Lisa, and like, in the TIR universe, she would have been one of the white girls. MLK is fucking out.
A like, pog.
Yep. Fat ass, big titties, purple hair, lip piercing. And my Aunt Patty just looks her up and down, and it's just dead ass goes, you let him put his dick in you?
Oh!
And I was like, excuse me, right? Like, what the fuck? And of course, my grandmother, who's in a wheelchair at this point, she, you know, she's like, you know, Michael, don't swear in front of me. I'm like, Grandma, I'm so sorry, but your daughter here is just being a horrible person. And she goes, she's always been a horrible person. I figured you'd be used to it by now, you know. And I'm just like, and this poor girl, you know, my girlfriend is just like, she was very demure, you know, so like, she gets yelled at and she's just kind of like, you know, looking around. I was like, man, fuck this dude. So like, we go upstairs with like all my cousins and shit. And she's like, you know, I feel really shitty. And I'm like, you don't have to. I'm like, my Aunt Patty is just a bitch. Like, she's just a bitch. There's nothing we can do about it, right? And then she's like, goes digging in, like, you know, those little pockets that they actually let women have in their jeans.
And she just little ass pockets, yeah.
She pulls out this perfectly rolled joint. She's like, I'm gonna go smoke this. And I'm like, bet, right? So we go behind the garage, and like, one of my cousins come over, and I can hear all the younger kids like, why does it smell funny? You know, and we're just like getting fucking stoned on some primo fucking weed. Mm. And then lo and behold, I guess my grandmother screamed at my Aunt Patty enough to go outside and smoke. She turns the corner and just with a cigarette in her mouth, and she looks at me and she goes, fucking degenerate.
And she's fucking getting wasted.
Right. So I'm sitting there smoking, and I pass it to Lisa, and then you see Patty's hands. Right. And she's like the Snoop character from Half Baked, mm-hmm. where, you know, Chappelle's describing all the smokers, and like, Snoop just keeps hitting it until there's mm-hmm. nothing left, and then he finally passes it. My Aunt Patty just is like, and you see the fucking paper just
disintegrating.
God damn. And she's just like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Now she's drunk and high. Did she get nicer as she got stoned?
Fuck no, dude.
Oh.
The zingers just like, she would go after my Aunt Colleen, who was like, when she was in the Air Force, she was like a total party girl, but then she met her husband and it got like uber conservative, like became almost like a trad wife kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And just kept popping out babies and shit. And she's like, my Aunt Colleen's pregnant again. And like, my cousin's there, and she's only like a year and a half old. And Patty's like, just getting them out in a quick succession, huh? You know, if she looks at her husband and she's like, listen, Tony, if you just drop trow after she's healed up, you can have Irish twins, you know? And my grandma, you know, and Tony's very Italian, and he's just like, Jesus Christ, I married in this family a mix, and look at what they're doing. You know, like, I should have listened to my grandmother who said, never marry an Irish woman, right?
Oh, and really? You're not supposed to marry an Irish woman?
Oh, dude, Italians and Irish people do not mix well. People are like, but you're really? Both Catholic, so it'll
I
work well.
I don't know no, it fucking anything won't. About this.
Dude, my grandmother, mm-hmm. nicest lady I ever met, loved everybody. Dude, she lived on the west side of Cleveland, and all the neighborhood came out when she got sick, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody. Didn't matter if you were from Turkey, if you were a black kid, like, everybody just knew my grandmother, because she loved everybody. She'd go out on our patio, sit out there and like smoke, fucking read the newspaper, and everybody that walked by, she'd know them, you know, and just wave. Mm-hmm. Right. My grandmother, like 2 weeks before she died, and she's like, you know, I got to tell you something, Mike. And I was like, what is it, Grandma? I had a crush on Joe DiMaggio. And I was like, well, if there's a person I have a crush on, it should be Joe DiMaggio. And she's like, what? He's Italian. Like, it's the worst thing in the world, you know?
She was like letting you know a secret. Like, yeah. you didn't put it together in your head. Like, oh, well, he was a very successful baseball player. And he was really grown. And of course,
you know, he was a good looking dude by the time, you know, like he was very well put together. He always wore suits. You know, he had money. And she was just like, she goes, I'm going to pray and light a candle for you when I go to mass so that you do not meet and fall in love with an Italian woman. It'll be the worst day of your life that it happens. Right.
Wow.
Yeah, dude. I love
hearing stories like this because I think people love to underplay the racism that exists within their own houses.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, it's like my buddy Wallace, like he loves hearing the shit because he's like, you know what I love to hear? White on white crime.
Because it's so prevalent. Dude, that's the first question my mom would ask. And I was like, oh, I met a girl. What color is she?
Dude, it was funny. Nope. Yeah. After Lisa and I broke up, I had a thing with Crystal Tiggett. I'll never forget her. So it's my senior year. Senior prom is a big thing. And Crystal, very dark-skinned black girl, right? Mm-hmm. She had this tiny waist and just giant tits. And everybody in school would just watch her walk by because there was no bra big enough to contend with these things, you know? So she's just like bouncing everywhere, you know? So like she made it so like as a dude you couldn't bump into another dude in the hallway. You had to be very careful how you walked because you could only cover up so much with your books. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, poor girl.
Right? But she knew it. She loved it. She played into it. So like she doesn't have a boyfriend or anything, and we're like right before winter break, I was like, hey, let's go do something. So we started like kind of dating. And so prom rolls around, right? And I've only met her mom at this point. I played football. Crystal is a cheerleader. You know, I played basketball. She played basketball too. So like I had a lot of interaction with her mom, and her mom was fucking super rad, right? Just Mrs. Tiggett, just fucking great people. And Crystal, like 2 days before prom, she's like, hey, you're going to have to come to the house and meet my dad. And I was like, all right, cool. You know, 17. I know I'm going in the military soon. And I got no fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
I should have had some healthy fear going into this home, but I didn't have any at the time. So like I'm in my suit, right? I'm thinking I'm looking good. I'm feeling good. My uncle let me borrow his brand new truck. You know?
Oh, so you just know.
Fuck yeah, right?
You turn off the mic.
Oh yeah. And Crystal and I had already been like hooking up and shit, but that was
all you heard all the way there.
And Yeah. And then the thing is she's like, we gonna get real weird the night after prom. And I'm like, fuck yes. I don't know what that means because I'm 17, but I'm like, it's gonna be something weird. Right. So I pull up brand new truck, get it parked so I know it's not gonna get hit, go knock on the door, and Mrs. Tiggett comes in. She's like, Mac, hey, come on in. And Crystal, like, just dressed to the nines, right? Like, she's gorgeous. Like, she had this like red kind of gown thing on. It was sparkly. And I'm like, God damn, right? So we're in the front room and Mrs. Tiggett gets the picture she wants. And she's like, okay, we're going to go meet Mr. Tiggett. And I'm like, okay. So I go in there and my dad told me, hey, good handshake. He's going to give you some shit because that's what dads and girls do. It'll be fine. I get in there. I go into this back room. Mr. Tiggett's cleaning a shotgun.
Jesus.
And, you know, Mrs. Tiggett's like, hey, I can't even remember his first name. It started with an R or something. We'll just go with Reggie or some shit, right? Reggie, hey, Max here. And he sets everything down. He looks up and he goes, Crystal, you brought a cracker into my home.
Oh!
Jason, right? My face just is like,
like that crying filter. Yeah. Your face turned into that crying filter.
Right. And I'm just standing there with my hands behind my back, right? Because I was like, do not put your hands in your pockets, right? Don't do that. And he looks at me and he's just like, a white one. I thought I raised you better than this. And Chris was like, Daddy, like, this is my date. He's my boyfriend. We've been dating for months. He's like, months?
Now he's Fred Sanford. Elizabeth!
It's the big one!
It's the big one!
So Mrs. Tickett's like, Mac, I'm so sorry. And she takes him into the kitchen. And, like, they are not yelling or anything. And I'm just like, I should run. I should just run out of here right now. And Mr. Tickett comes in and he extends his hand out and I shake it. He's like, Mac, I'm Mr. Tickett. Crystal's curfew is going to be midnight. Please have her back at midnight. And you have a nice face for a white boy. I was like, well, thank you, Mr. Tickett. I appreciate that. He's like, don't. My wife told me to say it. And he just spins and walks in the kitchen.
Damn. I'm sorry that your prom date's dad was George Jefferson.
And the weird thing is like Crystal and I, we get to prom and everybody's like having fun and we're just sitting at the table kind of like this because we just had this horribly uncomfortable experience together. Right. And Crystal's like, I don't think we're going to get weird tonight. And I'm like, I don't know if I can get weird tonight. Like this.
Your dad just scared the boner out of me.
I was just like, I'm completely off my axis right now. And she's like, yeah, that's probably for the best. And actually, after tonight, we should probably break up. And I'm like,
oh.
I was like, well, that kind of sucks. She's like, no, you don't understand. You know how we would like hang out after games or like, you know, shit like that with our friends? She's like, my dad will not allow it. And I was like, oh, yeah. And what's funny is I go into the Army and I think I was at Bragg for maybe a year. So we're talking, I'm 5 or 6 years into my career at this point. And I go back to Cleveland and I go, you know, go to Warren to see my mom because she was still the night the glizzy started. Cush, we need to set that to the tune of American Pie.
Yeah. The night the glizzies American die. Pie.
Mac had a date, daddy didn't know he was why.
But so,
he told me this will be the day that I die. If I try to bang his daughter, if I try.
So I go to this bar all the old steelworkers would go to. And I just sit down at the bar and, you know, I got like a, they had a Jack Guinness. So I was like, I'll take a pint. And they were like, okay. So I'm just sitting there sipping my Guinness. You know, I'm watching TV because they got like one of, I think the Browns were playing. And I hear a familiar voice. What fucking quarter is it? And you know, just heavy footsteps. And I start sweating. Right. And I'm like, where is this? Why? I just got back from a deployment, right? And this is my third deployment. Why the fuck am I freaking out over hearing a voice? And I look over my right, it's Mr. Tickett, right? And keep in mind at this point, you know, I got tattoos, you know, I'm put a muscle on, you know, I have like the fucking, the veterans look where I can just kind of like stare off, think everything's fine. And every, like somebody will come up and be like, you all right, dude? You know? And he sits down next to me and he's kind of doing this. You know, like when older people recognize something, but it's not clicking. It's just kind of like they keep squinting and getting closer. Mm-hmm. And he goes, the white boy with the nice face. And I was like, how the hell are you?
The white boy with the nice face. Aww.
Right. And he goes, didn't expect to see. He's like, well, the first question was, you still live around here? And I was like, no, man, I joined the military. And he's like, Oh, so you have a respectable job. And I was like, I wouldn't call it respectable what I do, but sure.
Sir, I joined the military.
Yeah, you know.
Not a mailman.
Yeah, and then he looks at me and immediately gets enraged. And here's the why. You broke my daughter's heart and she cried every night for like 3 weeks. I was like, bro? Like the Mr. Tickett went out the window at this point. I was like, bro, your daughter broke up with me on prom. And he's like, oh, damn. I was like, yeah. And he's like, did you cry? And I was like, well, no.
Did you cry?
I was like, I went out and got fucking drunk and stoned with my buddies. And he was like, white men. I was like, yeah, okay, fair. You know, like,
like, what do black dudes do?
You know, but it was like surreal because Warren's such a small area and everybody that moves away kind of gets drawn back at a certain point. Like maybe their parents got sick. you know, and they're there to help. It's just, it's this weird, it's got a weird pool. All of Northeast Ohio is like that, you know. But man, I was thrown for, like, it was like a curveball when I saw walk into the one bar, like, where I was at that time. And in my formative teenage years, he was the, you know, purveyor of the worst teenage memory that you could fucking have, you know?
Like, oh, dude, you had a something about Mary fucking prom situation.
Yeah. Oh, Vulcan, I met my Haitian girlfriend's mom by being found in her daughter's closet in my underwear. Yikes. I was forever referred to as slut boy by her in the funniest accent.
Fuck.
Because I nut quick.
You are God's child. Why are you always with this slut boy?
Jesus. Oh. That's no. If you're. Oof. I ran. The worst. Most. Oof. Can I say this on air?
I literally talk about the most, you know, inappropriate life experiences on this show all the time. So
there was this time I totally almost drowned trying to go down on this young woman when I was in high school.
And before you get into it, can we all the dudes here just fucking admit that we really wanted to be pleasers in high school, but we had no idea how a vagina really worked?
Not at all. I had seen one on television, and you know, I knew that Cinemax, there was this order of operations.
Yeah.
To get to intercourse. And there was, I won't say the one's
name. Jason's watching softcore porn on Cinemax, just taking notes. He's like,
yes, that is me right there. Okay.
Sex so. SOP. Start.
I'm like, first, be a detective. Okay. Got that.
Grow mustache, get badge. Got it.
Okay, got that. All right. Washboard abs, getting there. So I had a crush on this one young woman from the moment I saw her. Oh. And our senior year, she took pity on me and decided that we could date.
Oh, nice.
You know, she had like an older boyfriend. So I was already intimidated by that. Like, oh, dude, she did it like an older dude. Like, that means his dick is like way bigger.
It's so, so big.
Yeah, like, he's older, so he had two little African servants carrying it in.
Like, you just look at your forearm and you're like.
So, you know, there's all these, you know, young man insecurities. And so. Also, too, when you're young, there's things that you see in movies on the cable that you think are good ideas that you don't understand till you do them. Like, this isn't as cool as it looks on TV.
Yeah.
And she was like, we should get in the shower.
Oh, yeah.
And she had a bathtub shower thing like most people have. Right? Mm-hmm. And oh, man, I get PTSD just thinking about this. And so. On one of these horrible Cinemax movies I watched, I swear I had seen this. But the way we were trying to do it, she was facing the water, so I was under her.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, dude.
So the water is just...
spraying her in the fucking face.
The water is just spraying me in the nose. But I guess me drowning in the shower water was causing my tongue to just go up more or something. So she's just like, oh.
You're having a oxygen deprived induced seizure, and she's just like, this is the best she's thing like, ever.
This guy really knows what he's doing. So she realized that wasn't working. after I was like,
she wasn't willing to do CPR on you after you were
punching her in the ass.
Get this dump truck off me.
Clear. And so I think her dad was coming home. He like called or something. Because we got out of the shower. Like her dad called. And I had to like run. I had to get my clothes and like run out of the house. Oh.
Hide in a bush to put your shoes on.
Oh, dude. It was one of those where I'm like running. Luckily, she lived near a friend. So Coach Will, I know he remembers this day. I know he remembers this day.
An accomplice in your teenage hedonism.
Yep, because I did have no shoes. I ran shoeless to our good friend Ryan Tanaka's house. And they like, dude, what, like, where are your shoes? I was like, I got to get my shoes. You know, I'm in high school. I don't have hella shoes.
If I show up at the house without shoes one more time, my mom's going to beat me with a belt.
Oh, dude, I got beat for so many things as a kid. My mom beat me. Forgot why she was beating me. Like, why am I beating you? Like, I don't even know. Neither do I, but shit, it seems right. So.
You probably did something to deserve this.
Literally, that has come out of her mouth.
Yeah, it came out of my mom's too.
Oh, jeez. This is the same broad.
Wouldn't it be something if we were both related somehow?
Like, literally, that woman has said that while kicking my ass. Mm-hmm. I know you did something. Like, I didn't do anything.
Mom, I literally have just been in school, football, and like, my grades are even up. I don't believe you.
Yeah, I don't believe. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't believe you.
Take this beating like a man. I am not a man, though.
Being a pussy about this, a child abuse. Fucking whining about this child abuse for it. God damn it.
Jesus, that's the fucked up thing, is we laugh about it now, but we probably should be in therapy.
You know? Like, yeah. Yeah. Should be.
Hey, Doc.
Oh, well.
Why are you laughing about you being abused as a child? Well, if I don't laugh about it, I'm certainly going to cry.
Max, like, I do have all these guns.
Yeah.
What do you want? You want the jokes or do you want the school shooter? Tell me what you want.
You going to try this now, Mom? I don't think so.
It's not time for revenge. Let it go. They were doing the best they knew how to do. So we had to like do this thing where our friends came back. We like knocked on the door and her dad answers like, and I'm trying to like hide the fact I don't have shoes on. I'm like, hey,
Dude, Jason, look at chat. Look at Vulcan. Look at Slutboy.
Can we put this on the screen? One time while going down to my girl with the blanket over my head, her legs were cold, of course. As she came, she blew the first fart in my presence directly.
You got like a super Dutch oven Vulcan.
It's good. Look, it's good to know that we are not alone in these very embarrassing situations that happened to us in our past.
Oh, my God.
Kush look is like laughing at all this. She's like, you heteros. Kush looks like, I never fucking drowned in that shit.
And the way Kush is talking about shower sex, they don't fuck with it.
Yeah,
is shower sex ever good? Talk about fake news.
Never good. No. Never good. But you know, talk about propaganda. Shower sex propaganda needs to be stopped.
Well, it's because of the softcore porn on Cinemax in the 90s. Oh. Because there's no actual penetration. You know, he's just standing there behind her, like, up against the cheeks, right? Well, you know, when you're a young dude and you don't realize you gotta get down and get under there, and maybe your aim's bad, and it ends up in a hole she really didn't want. But you're like, I'm here. And she looks at me, looks over her shoulder at the person, and it's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, yeah, it was me, guys. It was fucking me. Okay, that happened.
In the comments, I don't care what your sexual orientation is. Don't care. Don't care what your gender is. don't care. I want to. If you feel comfortable, feel free to leave an embarrassing shower sex story.
Actually, we should set up a whole like champagne room call-in of just embarrassing sex stories.
If you guys are down, I will set that up. Are you down next week?
Yeah, dude.
I'm serious. I mean, we'll do a champagne room call-in.
Fuck yeah, dude. I mean, I have to go in like 5 minutes because I have to get up and lift and then take Kale to the dentist. But next Wednesday, I have nothing to do next Thursday until like I go to work at 5:30. So literally, we can do just a long running call in bad sex story show.
Bad sex. Okay, you heard it here first on the Red Zone. Next Thursday, champagne room. Matt comes in. Actually,
well, next Wednesday we can do like our regular show and after set up the champagne room because like I don't Wednesday is my blocked off day just so we can.
Okay, so yeah, so when Wednesday. Okay, we'll do the regular show. We'll actually do a hard hour.
Yep.
Hard hour. Surprise how many people love the crack. Because I probably am high thinking that, but we'll try to do an hour. Then we'll go to the champagne room. All phone lines will be open for embarrassing sex stories. You can be anonymous that way if you want to. Mm-hmm.
You can give us a fake name or a real one if you're not a coward.
If it's really freaky and cool, your contact info.
Yeah. Chase and I are both single. I mean,
you said you did what? Interesting.
Hold on.
And you're how old? 42, you say.
So you can buy alcohol and vote. I like that.
I'm writing this down in the notes here. Okay. How low are your expectations? All right. Great.
Oh, your expectations are the expectations we should have of another Biden administration? I'm your man.
Oh, yeah. Ding, 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 ding. There you go, guys.
She was clearly embarrassed, but it was the funniest shit I ever experienced. I kept going. I wanted to see how far I could take it. She kept coming and kept
coming. That's a fetish. She unlocked the key. She unlocked the key.
Vulcan, you literally made it this woman to where she can't come without letting out a fart. So look what you've done to her. who's the bad guy here?
Vulcan, she unlocked the key in Vulcan, and Vulcan was like, I think I know what my kink is, and it's getting fucking tooted on.
Yep. You like eating fart flakes. That's all right, Vulcan.
Add raisins in that. Those aren't raisins. Those are not raisins. And you might get pink eye.
I mean, if anybody watched Knocked Up, we know that farts equal pink eye.
Oh, that still was like the funniest shit ever. As dumb as that movie was.
Martin, your eyes are so red. They must have shit on your pillow. No, I don't have pink eye. I'm just really, hi.
That shit was so I'm so mad you remembered that movie.
I fucking love that movie, man.
But look, thank you guys for hanging out with us. We managed to talk a little bit of sports.
The important part of the sports. All you need to know about Major League Baseball right now, the teams that spend the most money are doing the best. The Guardians are 5-2. I'm happy about it. And then you'll just see my mental health deteriorate as the Guardians refuse to do trades to bring in more bats to make their offense worth it. And I just spiral into it'll guess our years next year. You know?
And then we can keep pretending that Dr. Claw is the doctor for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
That's right.
He very well could be.
You know, I'm sold that that's who he is. He's an orthopedic guy, specializes in knees, but he can work elbows and ankles as well. Like I said, he smells of very expensive scotch and rich mahogany.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have carpet. He's got hardwood floors.
Oh, yeah. Shiny ass hardwood floors.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's got a buffer for that shit.
Yeah. And the thing is, he's in such a good spot now. He's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do like RZA in Californication, where, you know, he's playing a rapper trying to become an actor, you know, kind of real life mirroring the art. He's got this giant mansion and Hank comes in, right? And he sees a white butler And he's like, yeah, man. I said, when I was going to get rich, I was getting me a white butler. And he's like, look, he's right there.
I can see Claw with the white butler.
Yeah. Dr. Claw's like, you know what, Jeeves? There's a scuff mark here. What should we be doing? Buffing the floor. So
but right. What should we be doing? The butler has to talk like a slave. We ready for dinner, boss? We're ready for dinner, Jeeves.
Jeeves, I've had a rough day. I had 3 ACL replacements. You didn't have the scotch on the table. I'm going to dock 3 months of your pay.
3 months?
Very well, sir. I'm truly apologetic for not partaking of my duties in a diligent enough manner.
Dr. Claw probably beats him when no one's looking. That's his kink. He beats his white servant when no one's looking. That's why Claw is like, he's like ambivalent on reparations. He's like, I'm living reparations.
Claw brings a lady friend over. Now, miss, we're going to have some foreplay. And she's like, oh, yeah. Jeeves comes out like a gimp mask and a thong. Just hands Dr. Claw like the cat of nine tails.
This isn't for you. I just want to beat him and get an erection.
Now, Patricia, you hit him. Oh, that is where it's at. Let's go.
Now let mailman hit it.
Oh my god. The mythos of Dr. Claw grows yet again.
And another week where this show won't be monetized.
Ta-da. And guess what, everybody? We're doing this for you. So, Dr. Claw, especially you, come on, man. You're an orthopedic doctor for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Get your ass over on Patreon and bump up the monthly, you know. Bump up the monthly.
Thank you guys for hanging out with Mac and I. We will be back next week. Mac, it's always a pleasure.
Always, always, man.
Thank you very much. Get some rest. And we are
out.